go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this ninth day of July, 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And that, of course, is also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. If you pop in right now, well, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Squeaky and Stock and Larry. Being the early arrivers that they are, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, even though he is the third stage guild navigator, absolutely has far too much good sense to fold into a man cave that is in excess of 111 degrees. Yes, yes, indeed. Hi, I'm Robin, and we are at the end of the week. It's Friday on the front porch. And it's been kind of gray and overcast here as the last tendrils of that storm system that lashed the Florida coast passes over us. But it's sunny and beautiful right now, not too terribly hot. Should be a pretty weekend, looking for partly sunny skies here. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to maybe get out and hike a trail or two here in the nation's newest national park. Yeah, I think it's going to be big fun. So we'll wrap up the week with whatever happens to be on our various collective minds. There is a button over at HeadOn.live with which you can jump into the conversation. Even if you don't have Skype, you can use that, and it'll take you right into the conversation, and you can be part of it. In about a little less than an hour. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So that means thanks go out to our ninth day of the month subscribers, and that means. That means thanks to Libby. Thank you, Libby. And thank you to James. And thank you to Ralphs. And thank you to Khalil. And thank you to Mary Bell. Thank you also very much. Thanks for Todd jumping in at the very end of things last night. So we're at somewhere in the neighborhood of $325 to finish the week, not counting Wednesday. If we could catch up with all of it, that would be fantastic. But we will do what we can, and hopefully we'll be in better. We'll go into Monday with no great big hole to dig out of. That would be wonderful. It would be wonderful indeed. Let's see here. Yeah, let's see. I did the Friday on the front porch thing, right? And there's Jeremy and Roger in Oregon jumping into the chat room. Wonderful. Bunch of stuff to talk about this evening. Mm-hmm. As often, almost always begins the program, the history of sitcom. Robin. This Sunday night, CNN will have a show about the history of sitcoms, and Jeffrey and I are looking forward to watching. Who hasn't enjoyed watching the likes of the Honeymooners or I Love Lucy reruns, as most of us in the Horn community were not old enough to watch those two gems when they originally aired in their heyday. However, many of us were old enough to view Hogan's Heroes, Gilligan's Island, MASH, Bewitched, I Dream of Jeannie, and four of my favorites of the 70s, Good Times, Sanford and Son, The Jeffersons, and of course, All in the Family. There we go. Taking care of a little housekeeping. Then there were the 80s. There was Roseanne and Cosby and Seinfeld and Friends and Cheers and dozens more that we all watched and enjoyed at one time or another. However, I really enjoyed All in the Family, the show that had the most spinoffs, including the Jeffersons and Maude. There were so many memorable episodes of All in the Family, but one or two that I will never forget is when Archie is asked to do a eulogy for Stretch Cunningham, his good friend down at the dock. Archie's fine with giving the eulogy until just moments before the funeral, somebody in the show informs Archie that Stretch was Jewish. Archie attempts to give the eulogy, but stumbles numerous times with stereotypical references that were totally unnecessary and ridiculous, except that Archie was a bigot who stereotyped everyone. That was a hilarious episode. The next memorable episode was when the actor Philip Carey played his friend Steve down at the bar, and Steve was a well-put-together, strapping man who resembled Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. After a round of arm wrestling with Archie, Steve tells Archie a secret. Steve informs Archie that he, Steve, is a gay man, and Archie just refused to accept Steve's proclamation of being gay. Well, you knew we weren't going to get through this without Jeffrey, didn't you? Oh, hey, wait a minute. Don't we have a Steve in New York that is gay? Steve in New York, was that you on Archie Bunker all those years ago? No, Jeffrey. No. I don't know about that. I don't know. Steve was born from near Cincinnati, and Mr. Red, the Reds mascot, always looked a little light in the loafers to me. Jeffrey! As long as they call Cincinnati the Queen City. Jeffrey! All right, that's enough. Shame on you, Jeffrey. Sit down and be quiet. Of all the noisy giraffes in the world, that one has to walk onto this show. I just don't know where that giraffe gets it from. I'm very disappointed in him at the moment. Joey notes, I also love George Jefferson as Sherman Hemsley as George Jefferson. He played that stereotypical part so well. The best episode of The Jeffersons featured George going to visit his old Navy buddy after not seeing him for several years. Well, much like Bob became Robin, Eddie had become Edie since their Navy days, and George just couldn't accept that fact and shunned his friend forever. Very sad. The interesting part of that whole scenario was that George was always so upset about how non-white people treated black people, but in essence, he treated his old friend in the same stereotypical bigoted manner. What a shame. This has been Joey's Journal for Friday, the 9th day of July, with Giraffery now in a sitting position for the Sunday sitcom special. And there's a $10 Let Eddie Be Edie challenge. And yeah, without going too deeply into it, I don't think there's anybody who goes through something like this without a little bit of shunning. Sometimes a lot of shunning. And it's happened to me. It hurts like hell. And it's hard to wrap your mind around and a lot of times the only way you can tell the truth in this country is through comedy. Norman Lear, the creator of Archie, of All in the Family, and Maude, and the Jeffersons, knew that. And he could broach subjects through comedy that could not otherwise be touched, given the tender and delicate fifis of Mirka. And it's worth remembering, I'm sure they'll mention this, All in the Family was basically a ripoff. It was a ripoff of a BBC sitcom called Till Death Do Us Part. And if you thought that All in the Family could be harsh, mother, that show was vicious. And mining British comedy for American comedy purposes was a sort of a cottage industry for a while. Sanford and Son was also a ripoff. I think Steptoe and Son was the original, was the British progenitor, if you will. Stephen, New York, noting, they also called Cincinnati Porkopolis, and I've always been a little porky. Now, Steve, easy on the self-deprecation. Reminding, the 70s and 80s, when sitcoms were more calm than sit. Lee wants to know, doesn't Giraffe know that there's a collection of Steves? A group of Steves is called a fraternity. Yes, we have a fraternity of Steves. But I think Joey and Giraffe were focusing on Steve in New York because of his Ahia. And see, it's thanks to Steve in New York I know how to properly pronounce the name of that state now. Ahia roots. Mm-hmm. Thank you very kindly to Christopher for getting us started. Thank you, Christopher. That takes us down to 310. And thanks to Joey and Giraffe, who just knocked things down by a whopping load down to 250. That's tremendous. Thank you both so very kindly. It really does help to make sure that this whole operation remains, if not a going concern, because it's not a concern, it's not a business, but remains viable so that the community can continue to have it with which to engage. So where to begin? I know where I want to begin, because this is the kind of thing that makes me, eat dirt and run rabbits. It's another one of those instances where politicians are caught saying the quiet part out loud. A bunch of no-good, godforsaken, maggot Republican lawmakers went to a little meeting of something called Patriot Voices. Mm-hmm. And a Democratic activist by the name of Lauren Windsor attended and came back with some, embarrassing content. She caught these Republicans talking about exactly the same, exactly what we have described here in regard to those noted centrists, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Mm-hmm. And like I said, they said the quiet part out loud. They were there. Representative Andy Biggs of Arizona, maggot, among others. Representative Byron Donalds participating. Oh, and he's not in office anymore, but I guess he still wields influence. God knows why. And that would be former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Sanctum Santorum, Rick Man on Dog Sex Santorum, Rick Bro Fro Mix Santorum, who recently finally got bounced from his sweet, 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 sweet remunerative gig at CNN. Let's check in with some Republicans saying out loud what they really, really think.
We have a bunch of people running around, particularly progressives, who all they want to talk about is, well, let the people's will be done. No. We don't want the people's will to be done immediately because you have the passions of the majority that remember, our Constitution was set up to protect who? Minority rights, not the majority rights.
But the reality is they are pushing as far as they can. Fortunately for us, the filibuster is still in effect in the Senate. Without that, we would be dead meat, and this thing would be, then we'd be having a little bit more frantic discussion than we're having today. But thank goodness for Sinema and Joe Manchin.
I like it when AOC is going after Joe Manchin. This is great for me. You know, it makes my job easier as a conservative because, you know, I can go to Joe Manchin or Kirsten Sinema and be like, hey, guys, you know, and I'm really sorry you're having to go through that. That's just a shame. Nobody should be treated like this. I just really thank you for standing for the country. And, you know, all of you in this room, people at home on Zoom, let me tell you right now, if you want to do one thing to keep the Republic afloat, call Joe Manchin's office, call Kyrsten Sinema's office, be polite, smile as you're talking on the phone. You know, if you talk on the phone with a smile, your voice sounds better. Just be like, hi, I'm here to talk to Senator Joe Manchin and thank him for keeping the filibuster intact. I'm just a Republican voter from state X, doesn't matter. But I just want to say thank you. Because what's happening up here is the fact that they've decided not to blow up in the filibuster, in a lot of respects, is going to save the Republic from the worst things that the left wants to do. And HR1 is the tip of the iceberg.
So we just got to hold the line right now. Keeping the filibuster is a big part of that, and all the other elements that I know y'all are discussing this week.
It's a lot easier to pass giveaways than it is to take them away. Really? And everybody thinks, oh, well, you know, we'll just take them away. No, we won't. So please, if any of you have any thoughts about the idea that a filibuster removal, it was a good deal, and I know the previous president was for it and still is, it's a bad idea. Call Joe Manchin and say thank you. Mm-hmm. Seriously. Yeah, yeah. Call Kirsten.
How about that? Did you catch that? That line about it's easier to take back a giveaway. It's easier to give away than it is to take it back. He's right. Rick Brofromix Santorum. He's right. The guy who thought that just letting people marry the people that they love would reduce this nation to a frenzy of bestiality and men like Rick Santorum having sex with doggies. He thought but it's true what he said. Witness the $1.5 trillion tax cut that we gave to America's billionaire class. How are we ever going to take it? We are certainly not having a hell of a lot of luck trying to take that away right now, are we? To support things that this country desperately, desperately needs. And did you notice the chuckle, the sarcasm with which Byron Donalds of Florida Stan said to call and thank Joe Manchin for doing their job for them and keeping America from getting better? Now, in theory, this should be sufficient. If it were actually the case that Joe Manchin somehow was genuinely, legitimately, and sincerely misguided in thinking that there was any hope of ever having something resembling bipartisanship in the United States, this video should be more than enough to show him that they're just having him on, as the British say, that they're just making an ass of him. That they're using him, you know, they're using him. But here's the problem. Joe Manchin knows all this. Joe Manchin just doesn't much like the idea of letting Americans vote easily. He doesn't like most of the things, or many of the things, that are contained within the For the People Act. He does not want there to be an outbreak of democracy in this country. Oh, hell no. Thank goodness for Sinema and Joe Manchin. Fortunately for us, the filibuster's still in effect in the Senate. Without that, we would be dead meat, and this thing would be done. Then we'd be having a little bit more frantic discussion than we're having today. Frantic. because people would be getting to, you know, vote and stuff. Yeah. Right. Interesting how Republicans define what dead meat, what being dead meat means. Interesting that they think being dead meat is what would happen to them if everybody who is legally allowed to vote gets to vote. If all those black and brown Americans get to vote, these pasty-faced, doughy white Republicans think they would be dead meat. Because they know how much they despise black and brown Americans and liberal Americans and lesbian Americans and gay Americans and bisexual Americans and trans Americans. Queer questioning, intersex, asexual. Everything that isn't pasty-faced, doughy, white, and wealthy. You know, the non-wealthy whites who vote Republican, they are, just to use a phrase that's been bandied about on this program for a number of years, nothing more than cannon fodder in the culture wars. That's all. And, they're the schmucks. Are you kidding? The Republicans laugh their pasty-faced, doughy white asses off at their pasty-faced, doughy white, impecunious voter base every day. Because the money comes from corporate America. You know, those people that they gave the trillion and a half dollars to. Yeah. It's back padding. It's palm greasing. Megan with a note says, where the fuck to unpack this soundbite? Passions of the majority. We got to protect superior white man rule at all costs. For the love of all that's holy, keep AOC's name out of your mouth. You freaks are telegraphing your sexual frustrations every time you bring her up in conversation, and I'm tired of hearing about it. I'm so glad to hear that Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema chasing the bipartisan unicorn resulted in them being known as the pick-me girls among conservatives. Did they hear this clip? And if so, are they proud of this? This whole group needs to be yeeted into the sun. They're gross as fuck. Cowbell for the usage of the modern colloquial term yeet. I learned about yeeting a couple of months ago. And, you know, once I got used to it, I found yeet. Yeet. Yep. And this whole group needs to be yeeted into the sun. They're gross as fuck. Yeah, Megan, you damn sure earned that cowbell, girl. But she's right. The pick-me girls among conservatives. Ugh. And see, the funny part of this is once the Republicans get the House and the Senate, they're gonna run. Oh, especially in the, you know, I say get the House and the Senate. The filibuster has nothing to do with the House. But there's really no reason to blow up the filibuster unless you control both houses of Congress and there's something you really want, like, oh, I don't know, privatizing Social Security. Yeah, maybe. Or, oh, I don't know, how about a flag-burning amendment? Those things come along every so often. And as I've noted before, the very instant, that there is something that Republicans badly want, that this protection of the minority impedes, Mitch McConnell, or if he should happen to shuffle off this mortal coil and go to his long, hot home, whoever follows him, they will yeet the filibuster into the heart of the sun. Oh, yes, they will. And poor Joe and Kyrsten over there with their unicorn hunting hats on and their butterfly nets out will be going, what? Wait, I thought we were friends. I thought we were bipartisan. Shut the fuck up, you two. Nobody wants to hear from you. You're pathetic. No more filibuster for you, Joe and Kirstie. Curtsy Kirstie. Mm-mm. And so this is who they are. This is the mask off. Everybody now knows. And the idea that, oh, well, you know, AOC is making my job easier for me. Well, because she's, you know, that way I get to go to an, and understand, insincerely say, gee, thank you, Joe. Oh, Joe, you love democracy so much that you're willing to keep it from happening. Thanks, Joe. Bullshit. And Rick Santorum, please. He must still think he's got some sort of political future. That's the best I can come up with. Breaking news of a good variety. Someone is exiting the administration. That would be Social Security Commissioner Andrew Saul. President Biden yeeted him into the heart of the sun today. Yay. Because the White House asked him to resign. Andrew Saul, you see, is a maggot. A bona fide... Trump toe-kisser. Now, they asked his deputy, David Black, to resign, and he said, yes, sir. And he resigned today. But Andrew Saul said, hell no, I won't. So, Joe Biden, what did he think? Joe Biden couldn't fire him? No, he wanted to be fired by Joe Biden so that they could add that to the grievance index. And we haven't talked much about it so far. But have you been paying attention to the great big crocodile grievance tears that these maggots have been crying over Afghanistan? Yeah. Oh, Joe Biden is leaving, making our American military leave Afghanistan, and what are they going to do? It's funny, none of those Republicans who are presently pissing and moaning, none of them, not a one, had a goddamn word to say when Nero was saying, you know, we got to get out of Afghanistan. I want us out of there by last May. Oh, then it was, oh, yes, sir, you know, we've been here too long, you know, and Barack Obama never should have started that war. You know, that actually happened at some point, I think. That blamed Barack Obama for... invading Afghanistan? The Afghan war was wrong from jump. And contrary to what Barack Obama was saying in 2008 on the hustings, I believe Iraq was the wrong war at the wrong time, and Afghanistan is the right war. I've always thought that. I haven't used my Barack Obama much lately, and it has suffered for disuse. I disagreed then, and I still disagree. And I'm glad. I'm glad President Biden is finally taking the steps necessary to end America's longest, most foolhardy, second most ill-advised war. No empire has ever taken and held Afghanistan against its will. Whether it be Alexander the Great. Before Alexander the Great, there were the Medes and the Persians. And they didn't have any luck. Afghanistan is populated by some of the most cantankerous hillbillies on earth. And they're not shy about letting people know that. Ugh. But now you get these packages showing on the for-profit media. America stripped Bagram Air Base to the bone, and now how are they supposed to get planes in the air when we've stripped out all the technology? Really, stupid people? Really, for-profit multimillionaire members of the media? Really? Yeah, let's polish it all up, leave all the cool shit, some of which is technology that maybe was proprietary to the United States of America, classified even. Yeah, let's just leave it all there and let the Taliban come sashaying in and get right. Because how did that work out? How did that work out with ISIS-Daesh? You know, when our vehicles, our guns, our armaments, our munitions were just picked up and turned around and used on our supposed allies in Syria and Iraq. Yeah, not so well. Oh, and by the way, one of the other passages that I've caught notice of in this discussion of Afghanistan and its imminent collapse. There are lots of well-trained Afghan troops who are doing exactly what the Iraqi troops did that we trained. And they're just taking off their uniforms, throwing down their guns, and saying, screw it. I do not have the guts to fight against the Taliban, because once I get my ass kicked, they're going to come in and cut my fucking head off in a big, massive ceremony in a soccer stadium or something. Because, you know, the Taliban do that. And some of the wise, wise foreign policy souls, they rub their little hands together, they wring their hands, and they clutch their pearls and say, well, you know, the Taliban won't do that anymore because they know it would look bad in the eyes of the world. Are you kidding me? Jesus Christ, they invited the world to watch while they blew up precious cultural heritage legacies, the Bamiyan Buddhas, when they literally brought together masses of people in a soccer stadium and executed them in the name of Allah. Yeah, they did that. And I'm trying to figure out where these sunny-minded individuals think that they're not going to do that anymore, that they've turned over a new leaf or figured out that there's a better way. Bullshit. They're going to do it. They're going to do it again. So, you know, a great big gnur to the bold and manly fighting forces of Afghanistan. Yeah, you'll notice when the rubber really hit the road, who stood fast and kept firing at ISIS. Yeah, the Kurdish women. Because, as the saying goes, the female is the deadlier of the species. Because they had the most at stake. One wonders if Afghan women will show Afghan men what it means to have courage. But then again, maybe they're not like the Kurdish women. Maybe in that culture, they have to be docile and demure. I saw, I think it was NBC, some women who were at a modeling agency in Afghanistan, and beautiful women, just lovely. He said, if the Taliban catch you dressed like this, what will they do? And one of the young women simply said, we will die. And the Taliban are going to do that. We had the story a couple of months back about how the elders, because supposedly there's no real administration of justice in Afghanistan now, out in the villages, out beyond places like Kabul. But the elders, trying to fill the vacuum, let the Taliban dispense justice. Bullshit. They're arm in arm and hand in hand and in bed with the Taliban. They want to live that way. They like, they prefer, they think somehow that their great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky deity wants them to treat women like shit. And so that will probably happen. And whether it was George W. Bush or Barack Obama or Nitwit Nero, we kind of missed the point. in Afghanistan, you can't let outfits like the Taliban
exist.
It is a brutal reality, and I'm not saying this. That's true. Brother Deacon Asa says, hell, y'all sold equipment to ISIS. That's true. I remember that story. Texas plumber sues car dealer after his truck ends up on... But we did. We do stupid shit like that. Unfortunately, a lot. But... And I'm not suggesting this as being viable. This is why you don't go in there in the first place. But if you're going to try to eliminate a problem, you have to eliminate the problem. You have to go and you have to be conquering Afghanistan would have involved conquering Pakistan as well. And God only knows how many other parts of those benighted South Asian nations and Central Asian nations. You have to root it all out, and that's a bloody, awful, nasty business that the United States should never, ever be involved in. There's no hearts and minds strategy. We were trying to, you know, Vietnam didn't work the first time, and we were trying to make it work the second. Quagmire. Remember how Quagmire got thrown around in the early days of Afghanistan, and then even though it's dry and hot and dusty and or frigid and frozen cold, somehow there managed to be a quagmire in Afghanistan too? Yeah. What a rotten, screwed up mess. Oh, but anyway, back to Andrew Saul at Social Security. He was interviewed Friday afternoon, and he said he wouldn't leave his post, and he said the White House didn't have a right to fire him. He was actually supposed to continue fucking up the Social Security Administration until January of 2025. But the White House lawyers told President Biden, nope, very much like the scene in Henry V where the bishops get together and explain to young King Hal that, yes, he has a right to claim the French throne. White House lawyers explained to President Biden that, yes, he absolutely, due to a recent ruling by the Supreme Court, had the right to shit-can Andrew Saul before he could hurt any more people. Andrew Saul, pissing and moaning, maggot that he is, said, I consider myself the term protected commissioner of Social Security. And I'm going to be back at work on Monday morning, and I'll sign in remotely from my home in New York. I'm the victim of a Friday night massacre. This was the first I or my deputy knew this was coming. It was a bolt of lightning no one expected, and right now it's left the agency in complete turmoil. Believe you me, bub. The agency is not going to be in complete turmoil to have one less maggot screwing things up. Because, you see, he's been doing his maggot duty. As the White House pointed out in a statement on his firing. Since taking office, Commissioner Saul has undermined and politicized Social Security disability benefits, terminated the agency's telework policy that was utilized by up to 25% of the agency's workforce, not repaired SSA's relationships with relevant federal employee unions, including in the context of COVID-19 workplace safety planning, reduced due process protections for benefits appeals hearings, and taken other actions that run contrary to the mission of the agency and the president's policy agenda. Yeah. Among other things, he twiddled his thumbs or did something else, God knows what, while millions of disabled Americans were waiting for him to provide the Internal Revenue Service with documents that would release their stimulus checks. And a lot of disabled Americans could not get their stimulus because precisely of Andrew Saul, maggot. And, of course, he despised those disabled Americans. Andrew Saul did. Jesus. He says he's very upset. What's he got to be upset about? He's 74 years old. He's a freaking gazillionaire. He's a former women's apparel executive. And, of course, he got the job, like every other Republican gets their job, through bribery. Oh, we don't call it bribery anymore because the Supreme Court says that it's not bribery to give a politician money in exchange for things. Yeah, thanks, nine wise souls. He was confirmed by a rotten Republican Senate in 2019. And among other things, because he was a rich former women's wear executive. Why are men running women's wear companies? Can you help me with that? Just wondering. Among other things, he sat on a think tank that wanted, of course, because it's one of the last great remaining Republican fetish objects. That think tank wanted to drastically slash Social Security benefits for Americans whose only means of survival is, well, you know, Social Security. And people who labor on behalf of the elderly and the disabled had been bringing pressure to bear to get rid of Andrew Saul before he could hurt anyone else. And now they have. And Andrew Saul. Well, Andrew Saul has a sad. Yeah, Darlene in Connecticut says, is it my imagination or does Andrew Saul sound a bit like a drama queen? All right, a lot like a drama queen. Oh, yes, he is. And but his feelings are genuinely hurt, Darlene. Because he was so close to screwing over so many of those undeserving poors taking up his and his cronies' money. Because, see, that's the way Republicans think about Social Security. It's money that should be theirs. But we're throwing it away, helping poor and disabled and elderly people keep on being poor and disabled and elderly. What a shame. What a shame to see perfectly good money go uninvested by our betters.
But,
yeah. What's that, Earth? Earther says, Matga, make Alexander the Great great again. We got to stay in Afghanistan. Otherwise, all the people who died in Afghanistan, their deaths will be meaningless unless we stack up some more deaths on top of the people who already died in Afghanistan. Lather, rinse, repeat. Right. As Earther says, or not. Crying over Afghanistan, Megan says. What about when we moved our troops and left the Kurds to get run over? Wasn't it pure crickets despite us breaking our promises to them? Tells you everything you need to know about their priorities, these Republicans. Yeah, sure it is. Yeah, the Republicans and Nitwit Nero, they probably thought those Kurdish women were all uppity for fighting back anyway. So, like I said, a pretty busy little Friday on the front porch that we have before us. Let's see here. That's good, Arnold. Loses something in the translation to try to describe a visual, but that's very funny.
What else? Well, I had one that's, since we were talking about the man who rules America. I have this handy from a publication called Sludge. They're an independent journalism outlet. They went digging around inside the money of, the man who rules America, Joe Manchin. Back to Andrew Saul for just a minute. Stephen New York says, I can't help but wonder what Professor Spicoli... I can't help but wonder what Professor Spicoli would have to say about Andrew Saul. Well, wonder no more!
You dick!
There we go. That's what I love about Professor Spicoli. He's terse. He is not wordy. And he gets right to the point when it comes to people like Andrew Saul. Mm-hmm. No, the folks at Sludge went digging around in the money of the guy who rules America. And as I have noted on this program, I don't know how any other programs, when they talk about Joe Manchin, mention the fact that he's a coal broker. He went and yapped to Edison Electric Institute annual conference. And he talked about how, well, we have to keep burning coal. We need an all-of-the-above energy independence system. Regardless of the fact that an all-of-the-above energy independence system that includes coal will ensure the continued ecological disasters that persist in bedeviling people all over this planet, including the new 90 states of Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on Earth now, today, in the universe forever under God. You know, it wasn't even a hurricane. It was a tropical storm that hit the West Florida coast somewhere around Cedar Key. I saw Cedar Key mentioned, and I immediately thought of that great old Jimmy Buffett song that begins, Travis McGee's still in Cedar Key. Well, it roared ashore and then just sort of raggedly crawled up the Atlantic seaboard. We got sideways silver dollar sized rain here in the hills and hollers of almost level west by coal Manchinia Stan a couple of days ago. And lo and behold, by the time it got to New York City, the subways flooded. Because, you know, that happens every time it rains in New York City, right? I mean, the subways just flood all the time, and we just don't make any mention of it, you know, because of the nefarious liberal media. No, I don't think so. But it did. It poured in New York. Or, you know, then there's the horrifying freezing temperatures that struck Texas last winter, or you know, Lytton, British Columbia, up at 120 degrees Fahrenheit, hotter than Las Vegas. Right. Yeah. Because, you know, that happens all. No, it's climate change. And Joe Manchin wants climate change to keep happening. Well, I mean, we could use our technology so we can keep burning coal. We could use our technology to do carbon capture and storage, even though that technology has already been proven to be an abject failure. It won't work. And you still got the problem of the garbage carbon dioxide in the ground, which, curiously enough, if it gets loose, kills everybody anywhere near it. It's something that coal miners learned along the way. There's methane and there's carbon dioxide, and they, in the language of the mines, They are referred to as white damp and black damp. And they will both kill you deader than Pharaoh's cat. But there he was, blathering away at the Edison Electric Institute's annual conference. And that's basically just a lobby front group for electric utilities that Joe desperately wants to keep burning coal. I mentioned on the program yesterday that there's an uptick in coal burning now in countries that should know better, like Germany. Joe doesn't like the fact that the Biden administration has said it wants to cut greenhouse gas emissions from their 2005 levels in half by 9 years from now. And Manchin is willing to be the voice that makes sure that no laws get passed to do that in the Congress of the United States. And so, lo and behold, maybe the... I'm sure Joe was invited there because to speak at the Edison Electric Institute's conference, because he is in charge of the Senate Natural Resources Committee, and we've talked on a number of occasions about why that is, who made that happen. Yeah. But it's also because he makes hundreds of thousands of dollars every year selling coal to electric utilities. This is an old concept in the law that used to be referred to as self-dealing, but now it doesn't really apply to senators like Joe Manchin anymore. Yeah. He's been brokering coal all along. And so he has a vested interest in making sure that places like companies like Monongahela Power, colloquially referred to up in that neck of the woods as Mon Power, his company is called Enner Systems. And they're a contractor for American Bituminous Power Partners, AMBIT. And they've got themselves a little power plant near Granttown, West Virginia. And that power plant supplies electricity to Mon Power. And lo and behold, Mon Power is a subsidiary of who? First Energy. First Energy is a member of what? Why, yes, the Edison Electric Institute. Son of a gun! Isn't it fascinating the way this shit plays out? Yeah, he's been... he founded Enner Systems in 1988, and then in 2000, when he became Secretary of State, he nominally handed over control to his son, Joseph Manchin IV. I've met him. One of the interesting things was that... Joseph Manchin IV, at the time I met him, it was at one of the JJ dinners in Charleston, and we were just getting the horn started, and we stood and talked, Joseph R. Manchin IV and I. Air America was still a going concern at the time, and Joey, as he's called, just gushed about how much he loved listening to our buddy Mike Malloy. Yeah, I know. Damnest thing, huh? For fiscal year 2020, Joe Manchin he disclosed that his non-public shares of Enner Systems, the company that he founded, and describes as a contract services and material provider for utility plants. Yeah, well, the reporting requirements are kind of fluid, so when politicians report the worth of their holdings, it's sort of a bigger than a bread box, smaller than a camel approach. And so Joe disclosed that his ownership interest in Enner Systems is worth somewhere between $1 million and $5 million, and that it had yielded to him in that year $492,000 worth of income. He's raked in $4.5 million from Inner Systems since he entered the Senate of the United States. And you can't go, as Sludge reports, you can't go to the internet and find Inner Systems. They don't have a website. But the Public Service Commission does have some records. Well, some of those records include a deal between Inner Systems and Waste Fuel Services, or an ambit rather, for Waste Fuel Services, and they. They handle and produce fuel at the Ambit plant. And, of course, the Ambit plant needs to close. All the coal-fired power plants need to close. That is, if we would like the planet to remain habitable for human beings, even mansions. Yeah. And so that's the guy who sits at the head of Senate Natural Resources who will make sure that nothing that would actually help us save the future ability of humans to live on this planet gets through the Senate. And I'm not going to beat the dead horse again regarding how we came to have Joe Manchin be the head of the Senate Natural Resources Committee. But I will say this, it pisses me right off. Still pisses me off. Because the very people who made that possible, the very person who made that possible, ran around this country for the better part of a year saying that climate change is the most dire national security threat that the United States faces in the coming in the coming years. And then when that person had an opportunity to make those policies a reality as the chair of Senate Natural Resources, that person yeeted our future down a deep, deep, dark coal mine shaft and took off for, dare I say, greener pastures. And as someone who comes from a state that has long been paying the price of coal with our bodies and our blood, yeah, really, that pisses me way off. And I deem it pretty much unforgivable. Darlene in Connecticut with a question. Why is Saul the CEO of a women's apparel company, you ask? Sort of like, why is that gynecologist a man, and why would any woman want him probing her you-know-what-its, or hoo-ha? Because Saul has to tell women how to dress. Daddy knows best, after all, Darlene says. It's like those male diet gurus who know best what is causing women's weight problems and wrinkles. Don't bother ever asking women what we think. No, we can't think in Saul's estimation. Hey, look, there's big bucks to be made on women's insecurities cultivated since birth by the embedded white male patriarchal redundancy for emphasis system. After all, women are not allowed to feel one iota of legitimacy, let alone self-love, unless men tell us we're worthy to do so. Yeet! Damn straight, Darlene. It may seem silly, but there's a good exemplar of this phenomenon. I ran across it the other day, and it helps because, again, we can't tell truths to the American people unless we make it palatable through humor. It reminds me of a dear friend of mine, long since 2017, one of my very best friends ever. Growing up, he did not like to eat his vegetables. And so his mama, when he was a baby, would hide a little bit of hide his broccoli behind a little little dollop of chocolate pudding. I know, I probably just ruined dinner across multiple time zones, but we're talking about a baby here. And baby would eat the broccoli thinking it was chocolate pudding. And so it's kind of like that. We gotta give people. And where is this thing? You gotta make people giggle a little bit if you're gonna hand them some unsettling truths. And where did it go? Daggum it. Oh, maybe I'll find it in a second. Oh, let me look in a different place. No, because I don't want to piss people off, Brother Deacon Asa. Well, darn shame. It was a hilarious little video of discussing the absence of pockets in women's wear. And nobody told me about the absence of pockets. Mm-hmm. Oh, but anyway, we'll move on. Oh, by the way, Todd in South Carolina Stan says, J.D. Vance would like to be a guest on your program. He's willing to appear without his mentor, Dr. Charles Murray. Murray, the disgraced social scientist, taught him that many people can have their feelings easily manipulated into a monetarily fungible opportunity by taking advantage of their ignorance. J.D. Vance. What a schmuck. Oh, let's see. So we are at we've passed the top of the hour, and it's time for us to wander over to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table. And we'll check in with Sparky. A note, we've got about $250 to go to finish the week, if we don't count Wednesday. It would be great to knock that $250 out, and maybe then we can go to work on Wednesday. And then we'll be fully caught up all the way up to, Monday. And there's a harrowing bill waiting to be paid. Let's see here. Hey, Sparky, what's happening?
Heat
is happening, yes.
It's happening, and it's getting worse.
What's the fire situation out there these days?
Oh, I haven't checked, but the air quality is still good.
That's ridiculous.
I don't know of any fires around here. But it's gonna get worse when it gets up to 114 tomorrow.
Ugh. But it's a dry heat, right?
Oh, it's extremely dry.
Bone dry.
Well, kind of takes your breath away when you go out from air conditioning to it.
It's kind of furnace-like, isn't it?
Yes. If I had a video camera, I'd go out and fry an egg on a sidewalk, but I don't have one.
You think that would happen? I mean, you think it would really do that?
Yeah, I did it when I was a kid. In 110 degree weather. In Willows, California. That was probably like the middle of August. So we've got a long way to go before we get any relief from the heat. Probably Labor Day.
That's a long time to go.
Hey, Robin?
Yes.
Can I ask a question?
You certainly may.
Is the Holler Tree air conditioned? Because if the Holler Tree is out in California, I always suspected it was probably around Sparky's property. If that's the case,
it's out back in the pasture.
But see, the meeting space is down in the root ball, so it's a nice, cool, comfortable 54 degrees in there because it's subterranean.
And the pasture's in the process of being flooded right now. They just moved the cows.
If the pasture's being flooded, do I need to bring my swim wings to be in the down in the Holler Tree?
Yeah, and your little nose clip too.
Yeah, and rubber boots, because there's a lot of cow chips out there.
Okay, and my what was those coverings that on your head to keep your hair dry?
Swim caps. I need to get one of those.
Can't be for a black person though.
Oh dear God. Please, no.
Did you see that conversation?
No. No.
They come up with these swim caps for women, black women, because they could grow their hair longer, and they would kind of go out the back and look like some kind of alien monster type thing head. They outlawed them.
What?
That went to-
oh, for fuck! You know the ongoing obsession with the white obsession with African American women's hair. Oh my God! If Tracy was here, she'd be screaming by now.
Can I ask a question about that? You know, my dad, and this isn't specifically about black women. This is about black folks in general. My dad told me a story that when I was a kid.
Is this gonna get you or me or anybody else in trouble, Steve?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay. Just checking.
Not at all. My dad, when I was a kid, since my parents were divorced when I was four, I was probably 2 or 3 years old, if that. Well, probably 2 or 3, or maybe 4, early in my fourth year. My dad worked at Chrysler in Dayton, and he had a black man who was a coworker, and he had that I don't know the guy's name. Maybe I think my dad said the guy's name was Joe. That might be. I don't remember. I heard this story a while ago. So they were walking out, and I think my mom had come to pick my dad up. They were leaving the Chrysler, and I was eating, what the hell was I eating? Like maybe a caramel apple or a lollipop or something. And my dad said that I, when Joe, I don't remember. He came over with my dad to the car, and that, you know, they were just chatting and saying goodbye. I just looked up at Joe and I offered him my sucker or whatever the hell I was eating. And he said, he looked at my dad and he just had a smile and nodded his head, because he was like, that I clearly wasn't taught, you know, the racist shit that a lot of people were taught. And what was my point here? So I was never taught that. So when I, you know, I've heard a lot of, and Tracy has talked about this, this whole, can I touch your hair? You've heard these stories.
Oh yeah. And it launches Tracy.
Yeah. And listen, I'm not going to claim how perfect my upbringing was, but I'll tell you something. When I first heard people tell those stories, the only thought that came to my mind is, maybe I was just lucky. I just don't ever remember caring about how their hair felt and stuff like, I mean, was I lucky or...
No, you were brought up outside. You were brought up outside the weirdness of that culture.
Because I mean, my grandpa was, you know,
but I mean, Southern Ohio is, well, it's just Alabama spelled differently.
I mean, I was not from that far south. I mean, Dayton and Greenville is where I was born, but. Sometimes I think to myself, do I just not remember? Do I choose to forget? But when I hear those stories about the can I touch your hair? Or honestly, on a completely different note, when I was in college, this is relatable. I'm getting there. I remember we had, and you can actually Google this, we had an incident with our newly elected student president who referred to his opponent in private as the N-word, and it got released, and it went viral, and it was all over the news. But anyway, so we had the president of the school, we had a number of assemblies and talks about bigotry, both racial bigotry, and the president of the school was Jewish. And I remember him telling me that when he was a kid, he was called Christ Killer. And I never will forget his response was, I didn't know who Christ was, but I certainly didn't kill him. But it just begged the question of, I never heard any of that stuff. And I'm just wondering... You know, growing up in West Central Ohio, I feel like I should have heard that stuff, and I'm kind of wondering why I didn't. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, like the story I just told you when I was like, you know, 2 or 3 years old, and I the guy looked at my dad and had that smile on his face, and my dad. And I think he probably said to my dad, you know, well, you know, that said everything. And I just wonder why I won't kid you. Sometimes it makes me feel really culturally unaware that I didn't know these things. I didn't hear this stuff. And I wonder, it's in a wind tunnel.
Is that you, Steve?
No.
someone's hang gliding.
Yeah, I don't know where that's coming from. It's, I had my mic muted. Sparky, Steve, and me are the only ones with their mics open.
Maybe it was me. I don't know. I don't know what it would have been.
You got a fan or...
I had it pointing up.
Well, we're hearing it in the background. It's okay.
It's not there now, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Is that your AC, Sparky?
No. I'm mute. You can't mute.
Well, but no, I just...
was Steve.
I think it was probably me.
Yeah, it is you, Steve.
And I don't want to come across as like, hey, you know, the enlightened white guy. I don't want to come across that way, but I wonder why... I don't ever remember those stories. I don't ever remember that stuff. And I feel like, given my upbringing, that I should have. I just wonder why.
You may have been insulated from it, Steve. I mean, that's possible. It does happen.
I posted a story about the swimming caps in the chat.
Okay. Thanks, Sparky.
Oh, by the way, did you get my... I sent you an email about the Edison Institute, which really kind of baffled me.
Yeah.
We have a group called the Edison Institute, which I would think, given how, you know, he was a progressive in terms of technology and energy in his time.
Well, he was, but he was also an asshole.
Okay, fine, but, you know, smart oftentimes, or you know, smart people can be assholes.
Well, you know, they thought, and I've wondered, and I suppose others have as well, if perhaps Edison was neurologically non-typical, because his childhood teachers, and I think the same thing happened with Einstein, thought he was slow, thought he was
intellectual. Wasn't he dyslexic?
I don't know.
I'm thinking, well, at least one of them was, and that was the, on the other hand, oftentimes people who, and let's be honest here, Einstein was on a intelligence level that I frankly think is almost mystical. I mean, to have come up with the stuff that he came up with on paper before, advanced experimentation, I think is almost, it's almost supernatural. I know that maybe that sounds weird. And I think a person like that, I could imagine that just his regular thought processes may have made people think that there was just something wrong with him.
Possibly, but, you know, no one... Thanks to people like our buddy Dr. John in New Mexico, who shared with me some of the more modern approaches to history. I try to resist the great man approach to history.
No, I agree with you.
And because it takes a hell of a lot of people to make anything happen. But Edison had to know where. And look, it's worth noting that scientists like Edison and others knew in the earliest parts of the 20th century that coal was poisonous and that it was dangerous and that it killed. But, you know, we decided, it's worth a few hundred thousand people's lives over the course of a century, you know, maybe a million or so, maybe more, to have electricity in homes. And moreover, the story about Edison that always just makes me sick is of the philosophical debate between him and Nikola Tesla. Also, a brilliant man, deeply flawed. Crazy anti-Semite, Nikola Tesla.
The father of AC.
Yeah, alternating current. Yeah, I know Sparky knows this story. So Edison was a proponent of direct current, DC. Tesla was the father of alternating current, AC, and I don't have the knowledge base to get into the differences. I know Sparky does.
One is AC, one is DC. That's the difference.
Well, not quite. But Edison was of the opinion that alternating current electricity.
Steve's right.
Okay.
And I've got big balls.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and Hell's Bells. And Back in Black.
Who's even more big balls?
Okay, you were saying, Robin?
Yes. With that diversion into AC/DC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Edison was convinced that AC was deadly and would fry people in their homes. And it was also a commercial matter because he wanted to make all the money. Tesla started off in Edison's lab, by the way. That's where he got his start, I think. But in order to demonstrate how dangerous, I mean, the brutality of this, it just turns my stomach to even talk about it. To prove how dangerous AC was, he set up a demonstration somewhere near Buffalo, New York, I think. And he put down a big sheet of metal. And he stood an elephant on the metal. And then, using alternating current, he electrocuted the elephant to death for the fascination of the people who showed up for the spectacle.
That's pretty disgusting.
It's revolting.
They had to hook electrodes up to the elephant somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll bet you couldn't guess
the
where.
The sheet of metal he was standing on was ground, super grounded.
Yeah.
Hence the song Big Ball.
Same thing as welding.
And they probably doused it with water. And I think... And shortly thereafter, all over the country, but primarily, certainly enthusiastically in the South, they went, wait, you can kill people like that? Damn. Let's build a chair and start putting people in it and frying them. I mean, the brutality of the history of this country is inescapable. I don't know if that qualifies as critical race theory, but it's still a fact. Stand by.
Uh-oh. Hi, John.
Hello, Spark. How are you doing?
Oh, hey, it's the Vertivo man.
That's me.
Hey, did you get any military people coming to your place at 2 o'clock in the morning again? Or whatever it was?
Yeah, it was 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, they like to have fun around my house. You know, let's scare the libtards. Let's terrorize the libtards. It's a favorite game in this neighborhood. You know,
the white supremacists are going to be at Dallas CPAC to kind of shake it up.
Oh, wonderful! Well, that's who they are.
Oh, I'm back. I'm back.
That's who that was they a, are.
I mean, isn't CPAC the modern version of KKK?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's home base for them, I would think. Hey, John.
How y'all doing?
John Brittavo, how in the world are you, my friend?
You've hanging had a... in there, Robin. How are you, my dear friend?
I'm okay, but my God, you have had a stressful week.
Well, let me start off by apologizing, Robin. Shit.
What for?
I'm so sorry, dear. Last Friday, amongst all the chaos of my life, I was supposed to be on your show and I was late and I tried to get in here and I flipped on my damn Skype just in time to hear you talking about the Appalachian
Communities Health Emergency Act.
Yeah, well, you were signing off. Yeah.
Oh, yes,
you were just doing your sign off, and I stayed around for the back part.
Well, I'm glad you did.
I missed it. I missed getting in there. So
well, I missed you during the live on air portion. No apology necessary, but I just want to ask straight up: are you okay? Are you and the family okay? Because you've been putting up with some shit.
We are okay. It's tense times in the neighborhood again. If anybody saw my Tuesday live show, I called it out, called his name out. I just, you know, laid it out all on the line. And they're not happy about that. They're not happy about that. Their whole family is not happy that I called their ass out. And so, yeah, there's still tense times in the neighborhood.
Jesus, John, you know, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I spend more time staring at my security cameras than anything else. You know. Thank goodness we have them, though.
Well, yeah.
We've warned them time and time again. There's 12 cameras surrounding my property. If you come near my property, you're on camera. There's a sign out there with a big smiley face that says, smile. You're on camera.
And they're just so damn brazen, they don't give a shit.
They don't care. They don't care. Sheriff says, well, you know, it's not illegal to light fireworks. Yeah, it's a Texas thing. Celebrate the 4th of July.
Well, hold on a minute here. Yeah, okay, on the 4th of July. Yeah. But other time, I mean, I know here in West Virginia, you know, we can be every bit as barbaric as any Texan. I mean, I know everything's bigger in Texas, but damn, you know, we're working on it. And if you rolled West Virginia out flat, we'd have y'all whooped.
But
it's, you know, you can put off these artillery bursts that these mortar shells that make a tremendous boom and everything. But at least in this state, you can do it like on Christmas and New Year's and 4th of July. I asked the other night why you can't do it on Easter. I think that's
up with that?
Yeah,
pissing Jesus off, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, people need to
I
be
want
in
some
bed.
Big booms.
Yeah, people need to be in bed on the Saturday night before Easter so they can get up and go to Sunday services. What's wrong with getting up for sunrise Sunday services and setting off a couple of $100 worth of artillery shells? But regardless, there is a limitation. You know, people, idiots, do stockpile these things so that they can shoot them off for, you know, oh, hey, look, it's my birthday, you know, that kind of thing. But it wasn't just that they were putting off fireworks, though, was it, John?
No, it was more than that. It's a message is what it was. This is the same guy that's been, and his name is Dakota Chisholm. He lives right down the street from me. Ever since the election, for 8 months now, it's been harassment. It's been terrorizing my donkey. Lots of shit. But on July 5th at 4 o'clock in the morning, security camera picks him up as he leaves his house because his house is on my security camera footage. Leaves his house, sneaks down here in the night, and gets right up by our house. And set off a 50 barrage mortar firework.
Was he on your property?
No.
Just
right on the edge.
And so does he think that you like turn the camera off at night or something?
They're stupid. What can I say? You know, that's we have footage of him terrorizing our donkey, knocking down a stop sign in front of my yard and
he doesn't
care. Everything's
on
tape. They don't care.
Johnny doesn't care.
No, he doesn't. That's the frightful part, he doesn't. But he lit that, you know, the big thing is he lit that fireworks, and then he ran away, which shows intent. He wasn't out there celebrating the 4th of July. And that's what I told the cop when he came. He's not out there celebrating the 4th of July and celebrating independence. 4 o'clock in the morning, no. He's there to terrorize my family. That's what he does.
And Jenny.
And my donkey.
Well, Jenny is family.
Because, Democrats, you know.
Jenny is family, yeah.
You should mention, John, what the sheriff said when you asked what he'd do if it was at his house.
Well, it's illegal to shoot fireworks in the city limits, sir. I live in the country, so it's okay.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you... Obviously, the law is a fluid thing for your county sheriff.
It is.
Have you perhaps considered having a little chat with the folks down at the prosecutor's office?
We're putting together the whole a film of all the harassment that we have on tape, and we're sending it to the district attorney of Nueces County. I'm also contacting the ACLU and the Southern Poverty Law Center. I'm going to try to do whatever I can. I'm reaching out for help. These people are not going to be happy until my house burns down, until I'm run out of this neighborhood in some form or fashion.
do they not understand that whole don't mess with Texas things applies to Texas liberals too?
You know, they listen to my freaking show. Every live show I do, boom, they're there. You know? And that's how come Tuesday show, I spoke directly to him and his family, because his grandfather lives on the street and his daddy lives on the street. You know, this is not like a one guy. No, this is constant.
This is a goddamn hillbilly feud, John.
It is. It is indeed. You know, they got their, I don't even fly. I don't put signs in my yard. You know,
no.
I got just under 3 acres. I don't put a sign out there. Never have. I don't want neighbors shooting at my house or shooting at the sign or getting pissed off. There's a libtard. You know what I do. I'm on the air. So
you're not careful. You're not careful, John. The History Channel is going to make a fictitious story about your story family feud.
Yeah, I just don't want it to be after we're dead.
Yeah, you'd like to live. You'd like to live to sell the rights.
Yeah. I'd like to benefit from that story a little bit, maybe. But It's a form of domestic terrorism is what he's doing. He doesn't think so in his little mind. But this, you know, he's a diehard Trumper. Trump, Trump, Trump. He's got a big fuck Biden sign out there. You know, school bus drives by every day, twice a day. Really? You got a fuck Biden sign out there just so the kiddies can see it. You're a hell of a good guy.
And I bet you he's a real good Christian.
Oh, he is. He is. You bet you goes to church all the time. His daddy, you bet your ass they're Christians. Are you shitting me? How could they be anything less?
Oh, John, how do you endure this? Jesus Christ.
Nobody is born a good citizen. And somebody said that one time. Nobody is born a good citizen. You're influenced to be a good citizen by your family, your friends, your teachers.
Nobody's born much of anything except a human being. And that's the nature versus nurture argument. And it's what happens with the people who are doing the raising. You know, it's like that classic song from Rodgers and Hammerstein that did South Pacific. There's that one song, "You Have to Be Carefully Taught." And it's about racism. The worst Klansman racist you can find was not born that way.
No, he was taught that way.
Yes.
And that's what we do today. You know, we just celebrated the nation's birthday. Guess what? No nation is born a democracy. It is born of the citizens that live in that country. It's born of a consideration that you understand that each of us have certain rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, free speech, all that kind of stuff. Well, I've been using my voice for 5 years, and I've had my share of trolls, pissy-ass comments.
Oh, and they damn well don't like it.
No.
I mean, that's a common trait among Republicans that, once again, and I keep trying to hammer this home, John, all this shit did not start with Donald Trump, and being shed of Donald Trump does not mean the problems go the hell away.
No.
I mean, nobody knows this stuff better than, say, our buddy Mike Malloy, who has dealt with this. You know, because they can't stay. It's not that they can't fight on a level playing field.
No.
They have to have everything tilted in their favor. That's why, for just as a for instance, there are so-called liberals and progressives who make a nice living being a contributor for Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
Oh, sure.
But there's an agreement that goes with that, and that is you can say whatever, you can make whatever liberal point you want to make, but the right winger always gets the last word, and that is what you agree to when you agree to take that check.
Aren't you glad you're not getting a check?
Yeah,
Robin.
Well, I mean, Jesus, yeah.
Well,
under those circumstances, sure.
Yeah. How much? Hey, it's Friday yet. Am I late for the miracle?
No, we're working on the miracle. Thank you to Elizabeth. Elizabeth jumped in a little bit ago and took us down to 225. The way it shakes out, I had to miss on Wednesday, and so that was a fundraising day that just didn't happen. So 225 will get us to the end of the week minus Wednesday. 525 gets us absolutely finished for the week.
525.
So, yeah. You know, but thank you, Elizabeth.
Because when I come on here, I try to stress really how important a donation that you make to Robin's show is. It's what keeps her voice on the air. And let me tell you, this shit's not easy. As Robin and the rest of my Blue Dot family very well have seen over the last 8 months of the harassment and the terrorism that my family has had to face. But every day I use my voice. We can't let them stop you.
Yeah,
we
and
can't
this,
let
and,
them intimidate you.
Right, and they're trying to shut you up.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
short of doing it with extreme prejudice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't like me on the air. They don't like what I say. They don't like what I represent. The voices that come from rural America are the ones that really get to me. Robin's voice is so – West Virginia? Are you shitting me? There's a Democrat in West Virginia? Where? It's that. There's Democrats in Texas? Are you shitting me? Yes, there are.
There's probably more liberal progressive Democrats in Texas than there are in some blue states.
Yes. Yes.
Because y'all big. A lot of them all kidding aside, y'all big.
And bad politicians get elected when people don't vote.
And bad politicians get elected when people can't vote.
That's it. And that's what they're trying to do now. That's what they're trying to do in Texas right now. It's what they're trying to do across the nation. It's their only hope is to lie, cheat, steal. Keep the base motivated. Try to get as many as your little maggots out there as you can to vote because you need the numbers. Because your overall national numbers, they suck. The Republican Party is just it's a
rump
not
party.
Even a
it is
of
a
it,
it is
be.
A rump. White grievance party. That's all yes. There is to the Republican yes. Party anymore.
White nationalists, Klansmen, maggots of all sort that are just what Hillary described as a basket of deplorable.
Yeah, she was right, wasn't she? Funny how
yes,
it turns
she
out.
Was. How funny it is that we look back. But you're right. This did not start with Trump. In my book, the major problem started when Obama got elected. That's when the major Tea Party, you know, that big resurrection of white supremacy.
But they were, but they were just disaffected Klansmen and John Birchers. I mean, that was proven.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe it's because of my age. I see the real modern downhill slide of America beginning on January the 20th, 1981, with the ascension of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan.
Ronald Reagan, yes.
To the presidency. Yes. And you're getting some notes, John. Darlene in Connecticut writes, I'm so sorry what's happening to John and his family. I'm a bit perplexed, and maybe these are rhetorical questions, but one, does Texas have any illegal fireworks bans? Well, we just had one. You can't set them off within the city limits. And two, does John's community have a noise ordinance? Setting off a mortar around at 4 a.m. would seem to fit the bill for violating a noise ordinance. No, this is the curse.
You think so?
This is the curse of living in the country. I mean, we like our country living. You and I are both we both live in the country.
Yes.
And it has its advantages, and it has its downsides too. Like your next door neighbor with you know two or three roosters in the yard who will make sure that you know that the sun is coming up. Every morning, whether you need to know it or not.
Yes.
But moreover, there are no noise ordinances. Dogs run wild. Yes. Cats run wild.
Killed by wild dogs. I've had my donkey decimated by dogs. Huge wounds, 8 inches long, deep.
Yeah. And so, you know, no, not much there.
No.
And Darlene observes, and the sheriff John is dealing with sounds like a fool. I bet I know how he votes.
It's pretty heavily Republican, kind of. I don't know. It's been the sheriff's department has been more or less Republican. You know, the city of Corpus Christi is not, but you know,
and,
one of our past sheriffs really was a doozy.
Well, Jude in the Great Northwest offers up. Forgive that this has been mentioned, but a restraining order, perhaps. Jude says we just moved through this process with regard to a gun being. Turned on my 17-year-old grandson. I will align with you, John, for some type of clearing. Thank you, Jude. Jude is such a dear soul, and her spirit is magnificent. Is that a possibility? Can you hail these fuckers into court?
That's the direction we're going into.
Because there are really old.
You or the Southern Poverty Law Center. If I can get a lawyer there, if not, I'm going to have to go out and hire one. And
that won't be cheap.
No, no. We don't make that much money, Robin.
Believe me, I know.
We
I mean, the AC.
Which is, again, why it's important for you to donate to Robin's show.
Thank you,
y'all,
John.
Y'all got to remember, this is it. This is her job. This is what she does. This is it. This is what pays the bills.
Well, Jeremy just jumped in and took us down to 215.
Thank you, Jeremy.
215 or 515, depending on how you look at it. Jeremy sent a note along and said, "Robin and John are national treasures. Let's get this down, family." Thank you, Jeremy. I can't thank you enough. I don't feel like a national treasure.
Well, you look like one. I seen your last picture posted.
Well, damn. Thank you, John.
Pretty good there, baby.
Thank you. Every now and then, that was a big day. That was doctor's office day. You got to look.
He was gussied up. The amazing things you two have done to keep normal citizens sane for the last 4, 5, 12 years, that makes you national treasures, both of you.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you. It's the Horn family. It's the Blue Dot family. It's the conversation, it's the camaraderie, it's the conversation.
And it's the cross-pollination.
Cross-pollination, too. And we're doing plenty of that. And we love it. We love to see the cross-pollination between the Blue Dot family and the Horn family. Because we're marching in the same direction.
Yeah, we are.
We're on the same team.
So
we're trying to accomplish the same mission.
Yeah. So Wednesday was Doctor Day, and you got to look good for going to the doctor.
Well, of course. Get gussied up.
And it was a big day. And what I posted, the text I posted with the photo was, I put obtain 3 gatekeeper letters, achievement unlocked. So I now have all 3 of the necessary letters for making things happen surgically to get me further down the road.
Outstanding.
And that was just a big, big, big moment.
It is, because I know somebody who has been through this process the whole way. The whole way. And it's not an easy process, and you're going to run into little bumps, but you'll get it done.
I can't
wait. It's who you are.
And everybody in this community has been so so warm and so welcoming and so kind about all of this. I mean, somewhere down the road, I'm going to be gone from the air for a little bit.
We'll forget about you in the next day. Don't worry about it.
But I'm going to try to make sure that I'm not gone that long. But you know, there's going to be a necessary time of recuperation, because this stuff is fairly extensive, and I try to be forthright and because there's a lot of people who have a lot of questions about this, and I'll answer any question that's put forward in good faith. And so it is extensive. It is complicated. It is not without risk, and I, for one, am a little bit, there's a little bit of trepidation that comes with it, because I haven't had anything more complicated than a tonsillectomy when I was about 4 years old, and that's the last time anybody opened me up, and they just went down my throat. This is considerably different, John.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had several conversations with different surgeons. There's one I'd really like to... go with, but unfortunately she is out of network to all insurance, so you have to pay cash on the barrel head up front. Yep. And then you get reimbursed by insurance on the back end, and that just doesn't seem particularly feasible. So I'm going to have to go with somebody who does who works with my insurance. I found one almost kind of close to here, but dude's requirements are so strict that I'll qualify for Medicare before I qualify for surgery from him.
Had to go all the way up to Austin to find somebody.
Yeah.
There's a
fantastic clinic in Austin.
Yes.
Does magnificent work.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
that costs money.
Well, I got to keep the insurance paid up. That's for damn sure. And there'll be, oh God, it's so complicated. And I say this just because I do get questions, and it's easier to answer them all at once than in 19 different emails. The process is such that, you do the cleanse the day before, then you go in like 5 o'clock in the morning, day of, and the surgery is about 9 hours, and then you're in the hospital for 5 days. At the end of those 5 days, they take some stuff out, and you step down and go and spend a week to 2 weeks in a hotel. Hopefully, there aren't any problems, and at the end of those 2 weeks, you can go home. But for me, given the location, going home is probably going to be a little bit more of a complicated process because it's about a 16-hour drive.
Yeah.
And then there's the recuperation period and the question of how long until, you know, I hope to goodness that I'm back on the air inside of a month, because things will be in dire circumstances if I'm not. But that's, and it's not, you know, there's no firm date, but it has been my goal all along to have done with this by the end of 2021. So, yeah, because.
So let's get it done.
Let's get her done.
Let's get her done. That's, again, I don't want to harp on this, and because it's embarrassing for them, but when she just said that she might be gone for a month, and she'll have to come back because there'll be dire consequences if not. That's what I mean by this is Robin's job. She's not going to get paid sick leave. There's no plan to pay the rent, pay the electricity.
George Soros is surprisingly not non-responsive.
Non-responsive to your request for millions, huh?
Well, never mind the millions. Just, you know, let's keep the bills paid while I'm gone.
That's why your donations are so important, because it's Robin's life that she lays on out here every day to come out here and put everything that she has in her out here. And it's not easy to do, baby. I speak from experience. It will wear on you. And there is no wage for this outside of what the Horn family donates out of the kindness of their heart. And that to me is it falls into that thing of I did my show today on the premise of you're not born a good citizen. We are influenced by our family and stuff, and the responsibilities of a good citizen is to obey the law, to obey the rules and regulations of our society, to do a lot of things. But one of them is to help others. And we do that. National crisis, we all come together. 9/11, national disaster, something, natural disaster. We come together and we help the people that we don't even know. That is what being a good citizen is. And in this case, being a good citizen is to support the voice that you support, that speaks for your heart, the people that stand up for the values that you believe in. It is so important to support those people.
We all have three powerful tools, a powerful mind, free speech, and the freedom to spend your money and support people who support the things you do.
Yep. Your voice and your vote, baby. And your voice is relayed through to Robin with a donation like that. I'm just saying, it's tough for her to come out here every day and try to make the money. It's embarrassing. It's humbling to have to ask for it. We're not paid for this. We get
no.
We
that's
make
what
our living out
no.
Of
that's
the
what
the,
that's what the right wing does.
Yes.
Oh, what
yes.
You want to you want to sound like you're on a you want to get behind a microphone and sound like you're on a bad acid trip and talk about.
Like Alex Jones or something.
Yeah, monkey jellyfish hybrids. You want to do that and sell chocolate chicken bone beverage? Yeah. Here's a few million bucks to get you started.
Yeah. Just go out there and scream your lungs out.
I don't know what the problem is. You guys didn't get a small one-time loan of $1 million from your father to start the business with? I mean,
No. They wrote me out of the Romney will, Jeremy.
Yeah. Damn. You too, huh?
Yes. I told him. Yeah. I mean, you know, my first name begins with R-O, just like Romney begins with R-O. I'm sure we're kin.
It has to be. Look it up in Leviticus. It's in there.
I thought that all dead Ed McMahon was going to show up at my door with one of those checks.
Oh, my God. I know. And thank you.
It ain't coming. So we need your help.
We badly need an update on Russia's status.
because I think I heard he came back.
No, he's not. He's not back. And in fact, he just completed his 452,000th crate of pineapples in reverse. Time passes differently in eternity, especially.
Robin,
when...
could we also have an update on Mr. Rumsfeld?
Donald Rumsfeld. Is only on his 97,000th crate of pineapples.
But he's chewing the opposite end of the same pineapple.
That's true. It's and kind of a it's kind
there
of
goes
a
dinner.
Yeah, it's kind of a human centipede in hell. That's right. Wait, that's a cowbell. Yeah. Thank you very kindly to Lee in New York. Lee said surgery subject line. I know this is an apples and oranges comparison. A friend of mine had neck surgery, C3 through C7. Everyone he mentioned that to cringed. He's recovering and fine. I say this to offer support that a difficult process can be successful. And thank you, Lee. That's my fondest hope. And it, you know, it changes your perspective. I mean, so many good things have happened as a result of this. I am 6 days away from, and sorry, John, I'm not rubbing it in or anything. I'm 6 days away from being 10 months without a cigarette. And I never in my life thought that could happen. And it would not have happened.
I couldn't be happier.
It would not have happened if I had not been able to find the courage to transition. Because that was this quitting smoking was the sine qua non. And so now I've got another chore in front of me, and I hope it won't be as bad. It will be bad, but it won't be as bad when I give up these lovely little nicotine pouches that, because it was the damnedest thing. You know, when you quit smoking, you've got to, and I hope this is an encouragement to anybody who smokes and wants to quit. I'm not one of those missionary types who's like, oh, God damn it, you got to quit smoking. No, fuck that. We're all grown-ups here. But if you want to quit, there are two prongs to it that you have to get past. You have to get past the physical associations. And then you also have to get past the addiction. Well, I reduced the addiction significantly with the pouches, and that allowed me. But I was keeping the Joneses away, and that allowed me to beat the physical associations. Like, I mean, I was bad, really bad. I would burn through the better part of a pack of cigarettes just during the 3 hours of this program. Now, I wasn't just sitting there chain smoking and sucking the fire down to the butt. In many instances, they were security blankets. And wow.
Steve's taking off again.
Steve,
that's part of my problem, Robin, right there. That's what's motivating me right now to try to stop myself. And if you watch my show, you can see me smoking occasional cigarette.
You must be taking those lessons from Ferg.
No, I'm sitting here. There's nothing on.
There's some sort of ventilation system.
There's something making noise.
Central air, something like that. Some sort of ventilation.
It's like a white noise machine, Steve, is what it sounds like behind you.
Yeah. But anyway, just to wrap this up real quick. I wouldn't smoke every cigarette. I'd light a bunch of them. Some of them would just burn up in the ashtray, but they were a security blanket. And every time I got in the car, I had a pack of cigarettes in there and a lighter. And before I even start the car, I light the cigarette.
Me too.
I mean, it is a profound addiction. I mean, I have known, and I told somebody else who's trying to quit the other day. I think it was our buddy John in Central PA who asked me to chime in on it. I know people who have kicked opioid addictions. They still smoke. And they said, man, I could kick that. I could kick heroin. I can't kick nicotine.
Keith Richards claims he's kicked heroin cold 3 times. It was easier than ever giving up cigarettes, so go figure.
Well, and there you are.
Remember, Robert Koop said that.
Yeah, see, Everett Koop said it is the most addictive substance on earth. So, you know, I managed to beat that back with the aid of these pouches. I think they really are a blessing, and they're a lot cheaper than cigarettes. And one of these pouches has about maybe 10% of the nicotine that a cigarette has. But because it's plastic surgery that I'm dealing with, I have to get off the nicotine entirely because nicotine keeps the grafts involved with plastic surgery from healing properly.
Isn't it a blood thinner?
I don't know that it's a blood thinner, but it's a vasoconstrictor.
I was going to say, it was a constrictor, yeah.
Yeah. It impedes blood flow, and you've got to have really good blood flow in order for the grafts to take.
And to heal.
Yeah. Yeah, and to heal up and be what they're supposed to be. So I got to get off those, and I got to be 2 months clean before any surgery date. So I got to be quitting them soon, just so that I've got that in front of me. But the larger point is it can be done. If I can, anybody can.
Can I just say something real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
You had said what you described, where you said like you smoked a pack during the program. What you're talking about is the difference between a psychological addiction and a chemical addiction. A psychological addiction is it becomes part of your day.
Yeah, it's part of my essential nature.
Right, and you associate certain, you know, and it's unconscious even. You probably didn't even realize you had cigarettes in three different places throughout the mansion or in the vast studio there. You didn't know that. I have really cut back on my alcohol consumption, but I know I've had a lot of conversations with medical folks about this. My addiction is not chemical. Because if I have it, I don't have it. It's physical. Because it's going out to dinner. It's nothing more than, you know, a person might crave chocolate, which I guess that is somewhat chemical. But I've done enough, you know, research and reflection to understand the difference. But anyway.
Well, I can say that this all has been very good for me because I went and got my butt kicked at the gym today. I've heard all these people, all these, oh God, I hate leg day. Yeah, me too. Now that I know what it is, I walked out of there. I felt like I was walking on a pair of rubber bands. Just legs were just.
Is that when you tried to walk downstairs?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I went and got Agnes and me a cup of coffee, and it's in an old church. And you know, if people come to, if we have the horn in, so far no takers, but if we have the horn in,
just you wait.
People will be seeing this place. But it's an old church that's been converted to a restaurant and a coffee bar. And it's got some concrete steps up to it, and I was coming down those things going, mm-hmm. Don't come apart, don't come, because I got a hot cup of coffee in each hand, so I can't hold the handrail and blah, 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 all the way down. And it's because I let myself get badly out of shape.
That's when a banister is really your best friend.
Yeah, I would have loved to have held the handrail, but I had a cup of coffee in each hand.
Elevator.
Yep, none of those either, John.
Damn.
You got to get one of those chair lifts.
Yeah, just for a cup of coffee.
What a difference!
Wait a minute, at the church? Come on.
Yeah,
it was a church. It was a church. It is deconsecrated.
Last week we were talking about cooking buns and rubbing buns and touching buns, and now you're getting a kick this week. Jeez.
Yeah, it's deconsecrated and recaffeinated, Steve.
Okay. Hey, can I will tell you something. I know one of the reasons that I'm very hesitant for the horn in is I've really been doing a lot of reading, and I'm surprised, and I haven't seen it in the U.S. press about this Lambda variant, which I've read everything from people that scientists have no worry about it to scientists are terrified. So I'm not quite sure. And if this thing... if this thing is mutating at this rate, and given the shit we have, where we have significant portions of this country that are not vaccinating, Those are Petri dishes. And I would love to hear from Paul from Parts Unknown about this, about them being Petri dishes in for one, and then also in particular this Lambda variant, which my understanding is it originated in Peru. But I believe, what did I read, that there are 4 cases in the UK that they had found. And, you know, and what stinks is this, is, look, I'm having a hard time feeling bad about these states that won't get vaccinated. And there's a certain comfort, and I'm using air quotes around comfort, that in certain parts of the country, the vaccination rates are fairly high. But the fact of the matter is this virus, or any virus, it has this
weird... It has the will to live, Steve.
And
it has the will
this...
to live.
Well, and just by way of sharing, you know, some real world experience, I had a note a little bit ago from Dave number 11. Subject line, hot fun in the summertime. Quote, 26 new cases of COVID-19 have been confirmed in Humboldt County today, the highest single-day case count since May 14th. And Dave number 11 adds, I don't get it. I smoked a rope and then waved a crystal in one hand and a pistol in the other, and I still got Verona.
And Robin, you know what, really, and that's what I find really scary?
That's a cowbell.
You forgot the UV wand up the anus. That was the problem.
And what I find really scary is this. Is that, number one, people have COVID fatigue, and I find that completely understandable.
Yes.
But, well, and then the other thing is that even as this shit starts to flare up, I frankly think people are like, I don't want to hear it.
Well, we are burned out, Steve, but here's the problem. The Rona don't care how burned out people are.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And you're worried about Lambda when just Wednesday a new study came out about Delta.
About Delta.
Oh, Jesus God. Some new stuff that's absolutely chilling. As of the article published Wednesday, the Delta variant grows, and I'm reading direct, the Delta variant grows more rapidly inside people's respiratory tracts and to much higher levels. And this is, and of course, you know, the maggots won't care, because this is research that was developed at the Guangdong Provincial Center for Disease Control and Prevention in, of course, China. On average, people who get the Delta variant have about 1,000 times more copies of the virus in their respiratory tract than those infected with the original strain. And then,
I saw this.
And then, when somebody catches the Delta variant, that person becomes infectious sooner, 4 days to reach detectable levels, as opposed to 6 days for the original. And it just keeps getting worse.
And the R naught is 3 or 4 times as strong?
Well, what happens is that then people who get it spread it earlier in the infection. And so, you know, the scientists are screaming, no, we're not kidding about the 14 days. And nonetheless, you get, and David in South Carolina, Stan, who got home safely apparently, I'm glad to know it, sent me a note. I couldn't get into the... I couldn't get into the story, but Governor McDeath in South Carolina, that maggot POS, has decided he wants more of the people in his state to get all dead, because I can't even begin to fathom what is loosely referred to as a thought process. In which the maggots went crazy when Biden said, we're going to go door to door to get people vaccinated. Immediately, you know, it was, you know, God damn it, the blue helmeted UN Biden, blah, blah, blah. And they're going to come around, they're going to force you to take your shot and not die. They're going to force you not to die.
And off to the
fucking
FEMA camp.
Yeah, off to the FEMA camp, and these fucking idiots. Holy shit, they're stupid. So,
and they're doing this.
So Governor McDeath says, you know, it's bad policy for people to go door to door, and he wants to make it illegal in the state of South Carolina for people to knock on each other's doors and say, hey, have you gotten the vaccine? Can I give you a ride down to the clinic? And he got in it with Jen Psaki, and he's not going to win in that squabble. And Jen Psaki, you know, God love her, she's no shrinking violet. And Jen Psaki said, "Look, it's this simple. He's going to kill people because it's true."
Robin, I'll take gray matter over maggot matter any day of the week.
I was going to say, Biden is doing this because he's getting the new studies before we do. And I told John Group this last night, but I read this 2 days ago, I think on the day you were off, and he was off too, so Tuesday, that the new estimate, before this is all said and done, over 1 million Americans are going to die total. And by October, because morons, we're going to be back in the 2,000 a day dead range.
Do you know what the health secretary is saying in the UK? And basically the health secretary in the UK is actually, the guy's name is Chris Whitty. He is a professor, I believe, at Oxford. He is one of the few who somehow got through the English Trump's administration, meaning Boris Johnson. And they're saying that they're expecting 2 million new infections this summer.
But everything's okay.
But and look, like I said, and like you said, Robin, I understand that people are fatigued. I understand it. And we're getting to the point where it's very difficult to say to people, we got to go back to where we were. I don't know. It honestly scares, you know. And let me say something on a very personal level. My uncle died, not from COVID. He was old, or not really that old, but he died last September 4th, 7 days before his birthday. And that's, if you see my picture, that's who my picture is on the Skype thing. That's my Uncle Ron.
I can see the family resemblance, by the way.
Can you?
Yeah, based on the photos of you I've seen. Yeah, very definitely.
Okay. They're having his memorial tomorrow back in Ohio. And the biggest reason I didn't go is I'm still terrified to fly.
I understand that, but there is some data that suggests that may be one of the safer places to be, as crazy as it sounds.
But you know what? I agree. I get that. The other big issue is I'm also terrified to hang out with people from Ohio, because my dad, who is my dad and my stepmom, who both live in Georgia. And
wait, you mispronounced it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ohio. Okay. I remember that.
I've been away for so long, I don't even know how to pronounce my own home state. Dad was telling me that he's at the funeral or wherever they're having the memorial, apparently, and I don't know if he said, he basically told me, he said, there is no mask mandate for funeral homes in Ohio now. And he told me, he's a little bit concerned about going into the funeral home and, you know, being with all those family. And then we have a number of maggots in our family who are not going to be masked. And I told my dad, I said, you should wear a mask. And I get it. He's like, I don't want to be the only one there, because wearing them, you know, I get it. The bottom line is that we're not through this. I think we can see the other side of this. The problem is there's too many things that have to happen that we're not willing to do that are going to be hindrances.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm...
It's a big lift, Steve.
You know, it's just like I can't get my mind around the notion that a vaccine is somehow a fucking political issue. That a mask... I mean...
Mirko. You know,
I don't know if anybody was alive or of course people were alive, but anyone here was alive or heard stories about the 40s and I guess the 50s or even the 60s when the
polio
vaccine.
Yeah, Malloy was talking about the other night.
Which we got in a sugar cube, by the way.
Malloy got the shot before the cube was
in the arm. Yeah, in the arm. There was because if you know, we don't get it anymore, but if you look at a lot of people who had it, there's a little round weird scar on a lot of people's shoulders.
Yes.
But I just wonder.
That's smallpox.
Polio.
Oh, that was smallpox? I thought Malloy was saying it was polio. No. Maybe he was confused.
In any event, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is, was there this weird? I mean, I gotta think that, from everything I've read, people were like, "Give it to me, give it to me, give it to me." And this,
yeah, no shit.
And also this notion of like it's somehow unusual that we required of people all of a sudden. I'm like, I remember when I went to elementary school.
I'm so old.
You had a little card.
Yeah.
And that card, you had to have that card, and you had to have your vaccines, and you brought the card.
You still, there's still a shot card to start your kid in school.
Yeah. And if you brought the card, and the secretary would look at it, and they'd say, well, you know what, you need to have this here and this, or you need to have a booster, or you had it too long ago, and you went and got it, and that was it.
You need to get your tetanus shot before the first day of school.
All right, the big difference here is that all those vaccinations did not go through an emergency use approval prior to the full approval. And the big argument right now is that these haven't been fully approved. And this is why a lot of people in the Marine Corps in particular are refusing to take the COVID shot in the military because the government can't force them to take the shot unless it's a fully approved vaccine. And I don't know what the time limit is on the time frame for when this is going to be fully approved. The fact that 99.5% of all the people that are dying of COVID right now have not been vaccinated is enough proof to me.
That's pretty
should
stark.
Be for nope. anybody.
Yeah.
And by the way, regard to the polio vaccine, I was lucky enough to get polio before the vaccine came out.
Shit.
Well, lucky enough. I was lucky enough with the polio, unlucky enough to get it.
Yeah, you survived. You were lucky enough to survive it. Well, and,
I was also lucky to have gotten it to be diagnosed while we were in Canada. So the cost was minimal.
So you can now polio. I think of obviously FDR, right? Does polio always end up in long-lasting effects, or no?
Yes, it always has long-lasting effects.
Oh, okay. Well, what's yours, Roger?
Upper body weakness.
Oh.
And from the time I was in, I got it the summer after third grade. And from third grade through sixth grade, I never gained an inch or gained a pound. And everybody could tell when I was tired because my head would fall down on my shoulder.
Oh, wow.
I had no idea. And, you know, Mitch McConnell has lasting effects. He does. He tries really hard to make sure nobody sees it because he doesn't want anybody to be reminded that he only exists through the kindness of, you know, liberals.
We the people.
Yeah, I mean, it was philanthropy. It wasn't a government program, but.
Yeah. All right.
By the way, we are we got 45 minutes left in the program, and thank you very much, John Bridevo, for your kind words earlier. We got $215 to go to finish today, and $515 to finish the week, counting this past Wednesday, which seems a little. But anyway, that's where we stand. It would be, and there's a whopping big bill that has to be paid as soon as possible.
I want to thank everybody who donated. I want to thank everybody who was able to throw a few bucks in. And you don't have to have much. $1, $2, it all adds up, baby. And if you don't have it, well, that's just fine, too. Send your good vibes and your love. Believe me, that's enough, because mostly that's what we get paid with. And so, yeah, thank you all that donated. It goes a long way, but much more is needed, baby.
Yeah, I mean, we got to at least finish the week, or finish today. And, you know, I wasn't here Wednesday, but it's just about it's about trying to raise a certain amount of money every month that keeps everything going.
I don't know how you do that, Robin, because, you know, I rely just on, well, let's see what happens. And I don't have a set number because I don't want to,
Well, this is kind of a minimum number.
Yeah.
You know, as I look down the road, it's going to be difficult.
Baby, it's rough.
And you know, here in a minute, I do want to talk about the horn-in because it's I really want it to happen because I want to meet so many people that I've been talking to for so many years. And I want people who have been talking to each other for so many years to meet each other. And, John, I want you and your lovely wife here, Travis, whomever, you know. We'll try to, if we can make it happen, we'll make space for you guys, get the Malloys up here, Dr. Bill, Boss Man Wayne, and just have a damn good time.
Bunch of liberals together?
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
In the newest national park in the United States. But the reason I have to bring it up, the reason I have to start trying to do it now, and is because, and I know it seems like a lot of money, but, you know, Fully half of it is going to go to just putting the event on. But things have blown up here. This place has become really popular really quickly.
It's a beautiful part of the country.
I have to book shit as soon as possible. And so, you know, what I said is we're going to create room for like 50 people. And each room will be double occupancy, so the $1,000 that goes into it will support either one or two people coming and sharing a room. I'm looking at different housing options, but everything is going to be booked solid for next year by Labor Day. And
thinking about it,
yeah,
now is the time to get involved.
Yeah. Right.
Gives
exactly.
You time to gather up the funds and plan it, because it's going to be an event.
It is. It's going to be for the ages. I was talking to a buddy of mine who owns and operates the little pub where I did all the cooking for the Pride picnic, Maggie's.
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh hell yeah, we'll throw a party for you guys. We'll love to do that."
There you go.
And it's just a delightful little space. You know, every Saturday and Sunday they have karaoke and a DJ dance party. I know musicians that we can get to play one evening. And then there's just stuff to do that's just magnificently, delightfully enjoyable. The trails that, you know, maybe some people are so bold and enterprising that they'll want to maybe take a rock climbing class or hike up to the rim of the gorge and just look out over 300 million years of geologic activity down 900 feet into the gorge itself. Whitewater rafting. Maybe you'd like to go down the New River. I am told, one of the most exciting experiences you can have. Or maybe you just want to hang out. Or maybe you want to go to one of the little gambling dens. I mean, there's, and you can certainly eat your way through Fayette County and have a damn fine time doing it, but I'm going to do all the cooking. You know, I posted those pictures at the beginning of June when I got up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and baked 100 biscuits.
That's like I plan on doing all my eating at your house if I get there.
Yeah, but I will. There'll be my, and you know, the folks who went to the Molloy Mountain getaway know what my barbecue is like, and it ain't
outstanding.
I mean, I don't brag a lot, but I am not shy about the quality of my barbecue. And
hey, Robin, I think I told you before about 25 years ago, I went down the gully with people from my work. We took a big van out there. Somebody had a big van, and we all went out there, and it was just incredible. And I'll tell you what, I don't think I've ever been anywhere where I've seen so many stars.
Yeah,
on that trip and sleeping in that tent on the gully.
It is amazing and delightful. No, Arnold, they will not let you base jump off the bridge. I know you would, but you can take the bridge walk, and you hook up a harness so you can't fall off, and you walk out the catwalk underneath the New River Gorge Bridge if you can stand heights like that. Now, I just feel like my stomach fell down around my ankles just thinking about it. But what we're going to do, and I'm a bad girl. I haven't put up the post at my GoFundMe page. And remember, to get there, just go to GoFund Bob, because we can't change it to GoFund Robin. It'll be there. But you know, I hope we can get this done, because among other things, for my oral surgery and what else is coming up, it'll provide what is necessary so that this program won't die while I'm recovering, which is kind of a big deal. And again, we got $215 to finish this evening, if anybody wants to jump in.
That's doable.
Yeah.
That's doable.
I want to share something from our buddy, Scary Jerry. Subject line, Delta variant, do not recommend. Been laid up with this new Rona for 3 days now. It's almost as bad as the OG Rona that I picked up in December 2019. When it started, I thought it was a cold. Sore throat, sniffles, generally blech. 36 hours later, I'm up late night fighting the devil. As I shivered and tried to keep my guts in, I'm thinking, this feels like the Rona. Delta is almost as bad as the OG Wuhan copy. I'm vaxxed once, but still, and have had the Rona no less than 5 times. None, really, after getting vaxxed until now. Fuck Delta. I'm looking for J&J next. I seem to be a Rona target. I don't know what you had the first time through, Scary Jerry, but it seems that the mRNA vaccines, the Moderna and the Pfizer, are the most effective, and Pfizer is now saying they are working on a booster that is effective against the Delta variant. But like Stephen New York, and he had to bounce, like Stephen New York said, damn, the Lambda looks positive. You know, the Delta's bad, but the Lambda may be even more horrifying. And we're not going to get past this shit Until people get with the program. I want to share something with you here just for a second. This is the story that David in South Carolina Stan hipped us to. And it is a letter from Governor Henry McDeath of South Carolina to Mark Elam, Chairman, South Carolina Board of Health and Environmental Control. Dear Chairman Elam, earlier this week, President Biden announced plans for the federal government to send people door to door to get help to the remaining people protected from the virus. Biden administration officials have publicly described their plans as targeted community door-to-door outreach. Communists, I added that part. Thanks to the tremendous ongoing efforts of the Department of Health and Environmental Control, working collaboratively with state and local health care organizations, South Carolinians have provided access to all available information about the vaccine, as well as access to the vaccine itself, which places little tiny liquid barcodes developed by Bill Gates that he can then read with his diabolical 5G cell towers. Now, I added that part, too. A South Carolinian's decision to get vaccinated is a personal one for them to make and not the government's. enticing, coercing, intimidating, mandating, or pressuring anybody to take the vaccine is a bad policy which will deteriorate the public's trust and confidence in the state's vaccination efforts. The prospect of government vaccination teams showing up unannounced or unrequested at the door of targeted homeowners, targeted is in Dick Finger scare quotes, or on their property will further deteriorate the public's trust and could lead to potentially disastrous public safety consequences. For those reasons, I ask the DHEC board to promptly issue direction to agency leadership and to state and local health care organizations prohibiting the use of the Biden administration's targeted door-to-door tactics in the state's ongoing vaccination efforts. Yours very truly, Henry McDeath. This is not surprising, of course, because it's fucking South Carolina. You know, the people who brought you the Civil War that killed almost as many Americans as Nitwit Nero and the Rona have done.
Need to slap him.
Oh, yeah, you got that song handy, John?
I just need you to shut the fuck up, because nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. 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 Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
Please.
That's exactly what we needed.
Just
pretty please. So this guy makes it sound like, you know, the Union Army is going to march through South Carolina stand and burn it to the ground to make people take their vaccinations. Fucking asshole.
Like they're going to kick the door in and stab you with a needle. That's what they're going to do.
Well, see, it's devious that way, because I don't know about you, John. I never felt the needle go in.
I didn't. They were sneaky. They were sneaky. They snuck up and just jabbed me right there. I was even looking, didn't even see the needle. Didn't feel it. It's amazing. It must be some kind of government conspiracy shit.
Probably. It's a real pain in the ass. It's a real pain in the ass now, John, because every fucking time I walk past the refrigerator, wham, my head gets sucked into the refrigerator from the goddamn magnetism of the vaccine.
Always the magnets. Just shit.
Well, you know, I'm stuck to the fridge again.
I'm trying to figure out how sex works with two people who have been vaccinated.
It's not something I got to worry about.
Repelling shit,
right?
Yeah, yeah, but they're a different pole.
I have to duck because all the loose keys flying around the house at me. I mean, I just constantly on the floor.
Yeah, yeah. There are mornings I walk out of here, I got paper clips stuck to me up to my kneecaps.
Ain't it pitiful? You know, it doesn't take much to be a good citizen. It's really not. You bunch of scoop, I swear. What are we going to do, Robin?
I made the simple mistake of going to my local right-wing news Facebook page from my local news agency.
Do not seek the comments, Jeremy. Do not seek the comments.
I died on that trip. Yeah.
I did it. And the first guy on there is about how, you know, this and that. And I just went there because of morons like you. This is never going to end. And he attacked me into, well, it's eating up your lungs and your liver and everything right now. Pretty soon you'll be dead and I'll be laughing at you. And I'm like, okay, and I just blocked him. That was the end of that.
Bye, idiot.
Wow.
Off to the cornfield with you.
And you know, I love that. Wait a minute. It's been a while since we've had an off to the cornfield remark. But, you know, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice said that these Republicans are participating in a death lottery. I wonder if he's got the stones to call out Governor McDeath, because, see, here's the thing. That's a big vacation destination. West Virginia's coronavirus problem was made monumentally worse because of all the hillbillies that just had to go to the beach last summer. And they go to the beach in South Carolina, Stan. Because the geography is kind of crazy, but it's easier to go to South Carolina. It's easier for a hillbilly to go to the South Carolina beaches than it is to go to the beaches in North Carolina or even Virginia Beach. Go figure.
Robin, may I add something?
Y'all, please, Steve. You've been quiet far too long, my brother.
Oh, man, I've been up since 4 a.m., my friend. I'm dingier than a prom girl on a schoolgirl on prom night, man. Hello, Steve. Hello, John. But
let
yeah, I see.
Go.
I seen something chilling today on CNN. They overlaid a map of all the states that went for Trump, and then they overlaid a map with a high infection rate, and they were almost identical,
yes,
man.
Yes.
What the fuck are we doing? Politicizing vaccines. That's where we're at, man.
We've politicized the whole disease, the whole virus.
Jesus, I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was almost identical, man.
Steve?
Yeah, Scott. What's up, brother?
What's going on, Scott?
Just me and the four walls that surround me.
Getting ready to text
and
you.
The roof. The roof is over my head and the floor is under my feet. But Steve, dear Steve, I believe, now I just woke up. I've had three sips of coffee and taken a handful of pills. So don't pay any attention to the veracity of my numbers. But I believe the report that I saw was the states that went for Trump by whatever percentage, that's the percentage of people who have been vaccinated. I don't believe it's the infection rate. I believe it's the vaccination rate.
Okay. Like I said, I'm very tired, but you get where
you'll
I'm going
get
with
some
this, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Get some
where
sleep,
I'm going
boy.
With this. Yeah.
Sleep will make you not tired no more.
I have
What's
plenty of time
wrong
for
with
that
this man? What is
can.
Wrong with this man? The answer, my dear friends, is so simple. So simple. Simpler even than a Trump voter. Now, how simple is that, my friends?
My right, answer, I'll my go. Friends, is blowing in the wind, Scott.
That's right. Blow what? And by the way, the way to keep it straight is from the movie MASH, not the TV show, the movie MASH, the football scene, because of the the people being getting magnetic,
yeah,
and opposite poles, Hot Lips was still leading the cheer, 69 is mighty fine. So that's how you avoid all that mess.
That's good. Cowbell for that, Robin.
On it.
Good to hear from you, Scotty. Ooh. Is it hotter than hell down there?
Oh, no. It's wonderful. Today is like the warmest it's been. It's been in the low to mid-70s for like every day for the past 2 weeks. It's up north that the problem is. I have a friend up
Sparky.
In...
Sparky's getting sparked.
I have a friend up in the state of Washington somewhere. And she's like doing a Wicked Witch thing. I'm melting.
Yeah.
It's horrible. People are dying up there, just keeling over fucking dead.
Lots of dead people.
What's Portland today?
It's not. Well, let's see. Maybe it's gotten crazy since. Well, wait a second. Oh, it's 86. It's not bad. I guess it's going to get worse this weekend. I'm not sure.
Chris, are you near Mount Hood?
So, it's not a far drive, 30 minutes, maybe, you're like really close as you're going to get to Mount Hood.
I heard that the peak is the sea level, Roger was telling me, is 7,200 feet. And I heard that it got seven.
I said that the temperature was 71.
Right. Okay. I misunderstood you. Right? The elevation is 10,000 feet then.
Is it 15,000? Something like that. 13?
I heard it was 10. Something. I heard 10. Let's spitball okay. here. Well, anyhow, it got to 73 degrees or 71. That's fucking unheard of, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
should
can actually
see, now,
see it. Yeah.
Yeah. When you look at Hood now, I mean, all, except for the big glaciers where nothing really can melt.
Oh, it's going to melt.
Yeah, it is. Rainier, they're already saying. Rainier is shedding shitloads of water, and all the rivers and streams can't keep up.
Reverend Wright was correct, or Malcolm X. The chickens are coming home to roost.
All the glaciers on Mount Lassen and Mount Shasta are gone.
On
Mount Good. Mount Good, 11,250 feet.
Okay.
What Brother, Malcolm didn't anticipate
10,000.
Is the chickens that have come home to roost are fried. So.
God damn, Scott.
Who said it was 130 degrees in Death Valley? Motherfucker. I mean, that's really hot.
Hey, on the little text thing, the chat thing of the front porch, I don't know whether I misheard it or misplaced it, but I need somebody to provide me with the email address to reach Bernadette at Priest Trees so I can get a sample or whatever of that stuff. And I'm sorry for being so dense, but
Priest Trees, PreesTrees at asis.com.
That's what messed me up. I misheard that, and no wonder the emails kept getting bounced back to me. I thought I was at a sing-along following the bouncing ball. You put the wrong email in, you big fool.
So, Chris, have you ever drove to the top of Mount Hood? I'm Googling it. It says that you can.
Yeah, you can go over there to, you can get up at 26, and you can go to, what is the name of that town? There's Rhododendron over there. There's a town, like
That'd
an old
really
town.
Cool.
And you can go and stay up at a cabin there that's really close to the top. And I think you can climb it. You know, the thing is, that climb is pretty treacherous, and people have been known to die up there and get stranded. So it's not any walk in the fucking park.
I imagine the drive would be hard on your vehicle as well.
Yeah, yeah. But I'll tell you what, past 26, it looks, it's like... It's almost in your car. It's so in your face when you're driving right past. You're like, holy shit, that's pretty cool. So,
you can't drive to any of the Cascade Mountain, top of any Cascade Mountain. You got to climb it.
Yeah, you have to climb. You can get up to the – there's a cabin very close, but then you have to climb the rest of the way. What's the name of that town? God damn it. I can't remember. Government Camp. Government Camp is what the name of the town.
I was to the top of Mount Lassen in 1980. Oh, man, it's a view. But the climb was hell.
Could you see the ocean, Sparky, from that view?
No, but you could see all the way over to Nevada. Real cool.
Wow. And, that's neat.
Jeremy, what do you know about... some ghost town in West Virginia. It's either Somerville or Somertonville or something like that. I guess it's a coal mining town, and now it's just buried by the woods.
Somersville is about 20 minutes from here, but it's very much a going concern. I mean, there's a whole bunch of coal mining ghost towns. I mean, there's a bunch of them inside the national park.
The one I'm talking about is inside the national park because they said it was in the gorge, basically, because that's where the seam is. It's right in the wall there.
Yeah, I mean, Kennard, Brooklyn, Nuttleburg.
Pretty sure it started with an S. It was on Discovery Plus. I was just watching like Mystery of the Abandoned. They're talking about, and they said West Virginia, this is the gorge. I'm just curious if you knew what I was talking about, but I guess not.
Well, no, I mean, there are a bunch of there are a bunch of ghost towns. And it's just, I mean, the little trail that I love to walk down into the gorge on here near me, it's about 2.5 miles down, 2.5 miles back. That thing walks past old coal works, and there's one place where you can go off the path toward the creek, and the entrance to the mine is there, with the name of the mine on the keystone above the arch, at the center of the arch. And I think it says 1919. And that may be one of the very first coal mines that my grandfather worked in. And there's another drift mouth that isn't gated or anything. It's just collapsed. And when I walked the trail last week, there was, I mean, it looked, it was wild. It looked computer generated or spray painted or something. But there was this vivid arsenical green moss growing on this rock and this bright orange acid mine drainage coming out of the drift mouth of the mine. You know, there are two kinds of coal mines. There are shaft mines. Well, there's strip mines, too. But there are shaft mines and there are drift mouths. A shaft mine, you go in, you get in the elevator, and you go straight down the shaft. A drift mouth goes straight into the hillside. And so
this was a drift mouth, and they said it was the smokeless time, like the best kind you can get.
Yeah, so-called smokeless coal. That's a low-sulfur, high-carbon bituminous coal.
Interesting. Yeah, there's a mine in Pennsylvania, Centralia, that's been on fire.
Been on fire. Yeah.
Hello.
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 Tommy, can you hear me?
Oh yeah, I am a very tough house to find. Here, hold on 1 second. I'm gonna come out there.
Oh, that wasn't somebody on the program. That was somebody talking to Chris. I was going to like, I hear a girl, another girl. Yay. I'm saved.
I was saying, you know, there's a town in Pennsylvania that's been on fire since 1963, a coal fire.
Yeah, they can't put it out.
Great Ice Centralia.
Yeah. And it's going to keep burning for a long damn time.
Oh, yeah. Projected what, Robin? 200 years at least into the future. Mm-hmm. At least. They don't have any way to put it out.
And on the other side of that, there's always the water. Coal mines are always associated with water. Water will seek its own level. You know the old saying. And all of these old mines are full of water. And so when I said there was acid mine drainage coming out of the drift mouth, well, that's water that is loaded with acid from the natural processes inside the abandoned mine. And something is happening on that mountain. The trail is an old narrow gauge track that just runs straight down into the gorge. Like I said, it was like, it's like walking down into a primordial sea and you never get your feet wet. But that cliff face is hard by the, because they built the narrow gauge railroad track up to the mines. And so there's all kinds of ruins of, you know, old mine works and the buildings that existed to support it. And it was the first time in a few months that I'd been down the trail. And lo and behold, now there's this great big slab of sandstone that just sheared right off the cliff and went right down onto the trail. And it just calved nice and smooth. It's as flat as a pancake on it. It's like it was actually chiseled away or something, but it didn't. It was just a natural process. But what happens to these mountains is when they get full of water, eventually they get the hydrologic pressure becomes so great that they can't maintain their mountain integrity anymore, and the water blows out. And we've got, you know, that happened in Martin County, Kentucky, back in the early part of the century. And every one of these mountains is full of toxic coal waste. And then on top of it, the coal industry was allowed to pump more toxic waste into the mines. For instance, the mountain that holds up the vast toxic waste sea down in western Raleigh County, 9 billion gallons of toxic waste, it's sitting on top of a mountain that's full of water, and the pillars, the way they do the mines, they leave pillars to hold the mountain up, and the pillars are collapsing. And so eventually that dam's going to go, and it's going to destroy the whole Coal River Valley. It's going to be a catastrophe of monumental proportions, and some idiot from the coal industry will walk out and go, "We didn't have no idea this was ever going to happen." Well, they got the engineering reports that say it's going to happen. It's just not worth it to them to, you know, make it not happen. Hey, thank you, George. Thank you, George, very, very kindly. We are down to 190 now. 190 finishes today's fundraising. Thank you so much, George. I cannot thank you enough. Thank you, Arthur.
Thank you, George.
Arthur just got us down to 185. Right. Thank you, Arthur.
Thank you.
And, well, maybe we can get there.
Of course we can get there.
I hope so. We got about 15 minutes left.
Oh, Lord, I feel a moving in somebody's heart right now. I feel it in the presence. Go ahead. Put your hand.
Lay your hands upon the subwoofer.
You can feel the love coming through. Just open your wallet. Isn't that what them other preachers do?
Yeah, they do. They do.
Touch the TV tube. Wonder how many people got shocked.
Yeah. And then, of course, the greatest Ernest Angley, the greatest Ernest Angley quote of all time.
The truth, Ernest Angley. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Baby.
The greatest Ernest Angley quote of all time. But I didn't make him come.
My dear Lord, my stars and goddess, brother.
But I do know that there's somebody out there that was thinking about it. So, yes, the answer is in your heart is yes. Please click on the link, make a donation, and help Robin get out of this week. Because, hell, guess what? There's another week coming after this one. It's got to be done, baby. So, please, dig deep in your heart. Dig deep in your heart if you can.
Steve in Georgia, Stan?
Yes, Scott.
Normally, you ask me about viewing tips, but I've got a listening tip for you.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know how I came across this. Did he come? I didn't make him come. Tell Brother Ainsley it's wrong. He'll go blind. You'll get hairs on your palms. And these aren't the sacred palms that the people of Jerusalem waved at the good Lord Jesus on Palm Sunday. No.
No. No, no amen, no.
Did you used to sell elixir in another life?
From the back of my wagon.
Step forward,
in a
my
traveling,
friends.
In a traveling show.
I have a cure for you.
Cue up, share. Gypsies, dice, tramps, and thieves.
Fuzzy dice, my friend.
What ailment ails you, sir?
It hurts.
We can mend that.
I was down at Avis renting a car, and I said, my Lord, this hurts. This hurts. Anyway. It's a podcast called
And the
Comedy.
Lord spoke back by the elixir.
No, the Lord doesn't speak, John. The Lord spake.
Spike.
Don't you
I'm
know?
Sorry, the Lord
spike? Spake.
He spaked it. Yeah, he spaked it all over the place. Damn it, he was out there spaking all over.
And he said, Lazarus, come forth. But Lazarus hopped out and he stinketh. Ooh. Ooh, Lazarus.
And behold, Lazarus were right.
Anyway, the name of the podcast,
that was good.
Steve, is Comedy on Vinyl, and as the title suggests, they talk about comedy that has been put out on vinyl records, and you will find of particular interest the five or six segments with Philip Proctor, who is still upright and above ground, who was part of Firesign Theater. They had some just fascinating behind-the-scenes information about the making of the records, their stage career, and all kinds of other good shit. So check it out.
But that was a thing. You have Rusty Warren, who everybody knows from the Bounce Your Boobies tune. Mm-hmm. There's Truck Stock Humor, but Gene Tracy was his name. I'm not recommending any of this. Yeah, that's some raw shit. You know,
yeah, I know.
It was a thing.
But anyway, I knew that you would probably. Well, I probably knew. I surmised that you would have an interest in that.
Sure, I'll check it out.
I'm sorry.
For austerity purposes.
I don't know what to say. I haven't had enough coffee. That's what I just. So I'm going to pause.
Speaking
now.
Of coffee, here's a reading tip.
Ooh.
There's a great author out there. I first heard of him when I read The Botany of Desire. And I don't know the title offhand, but if you look him up on your favorite bookseller website, his name is Michael Pollan. And he writes a lot about plants and our interaction and our interaction with plants as human beings. He's got an ironic name, Michael Pollan. But it's Pollan. And he has a new book out in which he examines three addictive substances that are part of the human experience. He examines caffeine, He examines opium and mescaline. And I heard an interview with him, I think, on Fresh Air. And he talked, and what he said about caffeine is particularly interesting, because he said, you know, something like 80% of the humans on this planet are addicted to caffeine. And it you know, and what his argument is, we need to look at what addiction means. And, you know, does it always mean that it's something bad? Because he talked about the salutary effects of caffeine on the human body. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this in the past. You know, the problem this country has with opioids, for instance, you've got an OD problem, and you've got, but how people got addicted is a problem, because it was deliberately hustled. You know, the Attorney General of West Virginia was a drug pusher. You know, if he'd been selling weed, we'd have him under a prison somewhere. But instead, he was a lobbyist for the opioid industry, and helped to dump millions of pills, millions of hydrocodones and oxycontins and whatnot on the West Virginia people. And as a result, you know, we've got a horrible opioid problem. But the problem with that addiction is more one of access and stigmatization, because you can be addicted to opioids and be perfectly functional, be perfectly productive in society. It's the fact that we make it hard to get, and we make people suffer for it. You know, that we have the heroin problem that we have because everybody went brooga 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 pills, and all of a sudden you can't get a fucking pill, so people are like, well, you know, I don't want to get sick. I don't want to get dope sick, so here, give me some of that heroin. It turns out to be fucking fentanyl, and you get, you know, 45 people ODing in 2 hours in Huntington. We are so stupid.
And Robin, if I may add, there is a huge distinction, and this is overlooked a lot, between addiction and abuse. They're two different animals.
Yeah.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
Can you see my video?
Yeah, I do.
I have in my hand, and what's in my hand is a magic elixir bottle, antique.
Oh, how cool!
From an old ghost town, gold mining town.
Yeah, it's a little fuzzy and out of focus, but yeah, it looks like a magic. Yep, that's the stuff.
Is there codeine in there?
No, it's got alcohol in it, 18%, but it's guaranteed to cure asthma, bronchitis. You can't read it. It's
Yeah. Those snake. I mean, your
sobriety.
Those snake oils were mostly alcohol, and a lot of them would have opium in them.
A tincture of opium. Oh, that's right.
This is no opium, or.
But there was an opium tincture called laudanum. And this country was designed and founded by people who were wasted.
If we all could just grow money trees in the backyard, cocaine would not be a problem at all.
You could grow your own poppy plants. Grow anywhere. But circling back,
morning comes and
circling back. Practically everybody is addicted to something.
To something. And just about every living species on Earth uses some substance to alter their consciousness. You know, birds getting wasted on fermented berries and flying into windows because they're pissed off at the bird in the window.
Sure, cats and catnip.
Cats and catnip. And interestingly, in this interview, Michael Pollan pointed out the only human beings on Earth that don't have some sort of substance that they use to alter their consciousness are the Inuit, simply because there's nothing that grows up there that will fuck you up.
That's another reason not to move up there.
On this topic, I have a question.
Yes.
Isn't it the Creator's fault? Good God in heaven. Tell the fundamentalists this. Would God create brains with receptors that are solely designed to receive whatever molecules these substances deliver to the brain? I mean, there must be a bona fide reason for having the receptors.
Yeah, what's their the answer to cannabis being able to basically grow anywhere, I guess, except for the North Pole?
Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me that they
You'd think there would be a lichen up there that would get you sideways.
Hey, wait a minute. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. It's Scott, you're missing the actual answer. It's clear because God did not want Santa Claus to ever be stoned because he wouldn't be able to drive the sleigh.
Uh-oh. And we kept relying on the Easter Bunny to eat the shit up before Santa got down here. But
bingo.
He fell down on the freaking job.
Hello? You know,
we had, you know,
I'm surprised.
Edible chocolate bunny. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a reason here in West Virginia when on the night of June 19th, before we go to bed, we leave out a six-pack of Mountain Dew, a pepperoni roll, and a pipe full of meth for the Mothman.
There you go.
It's tradition. It's so simple. That's such a joke. It was right there looking at me and right and straight in the face. If it had been a snake, it would have bit me.
But it was cross-eyed, so that's probably why you didn't quite get it.
Oh, well, I'm cross-eyed. Doesn't that cancel the other cross-eyed out? I don't know.
By the way, Scott, how are you? I just came back in because I was talking to my dad. How are you?
Oh, I just can't begin to tell you the multitude of things. No, I'm actually all right. I'm just so burned out with all of this cabin fever.
We're all as good as we can be.
And the stupidity of the people that should know better, that could help us move and get beyond this situation to the extent that that's even possible.
Not possible.
But they're deliberately fucking it up for the rest of it. They're like,
did any of you guys? Hey, Scott, did any of you guys, speaking of foreign substances, right? Did any of you guys see Meth Man, Mike Lindell, Pillow Biter Extraordinaire, his whiteboard? Did you guys see that whiteboard?
Oh, my God. Yes. I mean, he makes that beautiful mind whiteboard look sane.
He's saying, I think I read this, that Lindell is saying that Trump will be reinstated on the 13th of August.
Yes.
Yeah,
is that a
yeah.
Friday? I haven't checked.
Yeah, but he's got a big board with a bunch of lines all over. Yes, that.
That's it. Just shut the fuck up.
Yep, that's it.
By the way, when you say foreign substance, that's like German beer, right?
Absolutely. Hey, that's a very foreign substance. So is French absinthe.
How much meth do you have to put that whiteboard together? That's what I want to know.
Whew, that's an up 3 days kind of affair.
Well, my question for Lindell is, let's say that he's right. Let's say on the 13th of August, Trump is reinstated.
Oh, let's don't and say we didn't.
Well, just, I mean, we all know that it's not going to happen. But what is Mike Pence's role? Will he still be the vice president?
I don't think so, Lucy.
Hey, Robin, did you see that email I sent you?
Yeah, I did. Let me check in. I looked at that a little bit ago. No, his vice president is going to be John Kennedy Jr., for anybody who's...
Oh, yes. Still dead, but maybe not for long, I guess.
This is what...
By plane?
He's just been waiting.
I mean, what the fuck? Jesus.
Well, he, like Lazarus, will probably be...
Right, the JFK.
Did you see the show?
Ooh, wait a minute.
Just young. Yeah, left for a little while. Yeah, I'll come back.
Yeah, JFK Jr., like Lazarus before him, as we noted previously, will be a mite ripe.
A mite ripe.
Yeah, Sparky sent this along. Get the hockey puck. There's going to be a lot of barking and howling after this. The 7-point plan to restore Donald J. Trump in days, not years.
Well, you know, they're taking all the fencing down from around the Capitol now, just so the insurrectionists have an easier run at it.
Mm-hmm. I hope they haven't taken the snipers off the roof of the White House. I'm about to the point where they try this again. One, reveal.
I don't put anything past them.
Oh, I don't either. One, reveal Achilles' heel. Pull back the curtain on the horror show that is today's Democrat Party. Watch Pelosi melt like the Wicked Witch of the West. See the Black Caucus and other key groups flip unexpectedly and watch the tables turn. Two, witness a trusted conservative elected as Speaker of the House. And finally, reveal suppressed results of existing investigations into election racketeering. Three, correct the official record. Reveal that Trump legitimately won the 2020 election. Four, the Speaker of the House drafts articles of impeachment for Biden-Harris. Five, citizen Donald J. Trump, otherwise known yesterday as twice-impeached Florida retiree, is placed into the line of presidential succession behind the vice president by electing him Speaker of the House. Six, Speaker of the House Donald J. Trump then calls for a vote to impeach, charge, and remove imposters Biden and Harris. Seven, duly impeach, charge, and remove Biden and Harris, whereby rendering all acts of said imposters while in office null and void and of no effect, exclamation point. Then duly elected Donald J. Trump resumes his rightful place as U.S. president. This is on display at CPAC in Dallas.
In Texas?
Yes.
And these
you should be awfully proud, John.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's not your fault, Uncle John.
I know it, but I just feel guilty.
Everything that happens in Texas is John Bertebo's fault.
And thank you to our pal David. Thank you very kindly. We're down to 175.
Outstanding.
So we are getting close.
As you were reading that, though, in the back of my head, and just very faintly playing in my mind's ear, was the theme to the TV show Mission Impossible. It sounds like one of those fucking plot lines that you got to have.
Or get smart. It's got
you've got to have.
The thing is, though, it usually worked out because they had it well planned.
Yeah, you know? That whole thing was written by somebody who flunked third grade logic.
Well, logic is not something the Republican Party has a mess.
Jesus, Roger, they flunked third grade hand washing. What are you talking about?
Wiping.
Billy.
Oh, but John,
you wipe your ass.
John, I got a Texas question for you, and this is legit. So I saw something about polling data out of Texas where Matthew McConaughey is polling way better than Beto O'Rourke for governor of Texas in 2022. Can you shed any light on that, please?
I can't. A, because I've been occupied for this last few days. But the thing with Beto O'Rourke and Matthew McConaughey, is Matthew McConaughey has a name recognition.
Yeah, but
I want to just hug him and all this bullshit. And he does. He's polling well, I guess, over Beto O'Rourke, who's has spent his life working for the state of Texas, working for this country, knows the law, knows what has to be done. And amazes me.
Is Matthew McConaughey, you know, has he announced that he's going to run?
Not that I know of. He's just an exploratory thing.
Too busy with that organization he's working for with.
I thought he was too busy making Lincoln commercials.
He's going to be in Austin in the next couple of days. They got a committee hearings he's going to.
I mean,
he's trying to make his mark, and you know, I got to be up front. Matthew McConaughey has got to be a whole lot better than Greg Abbott.
A fly covered pile of shit sitting on a log in a swamp is better than Greg Abbott.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just want better for the state of Texas. We need somebody who is dedicated to this, not just I'll run for governor. Yeah, that's what.
Can I say something?
I played a guy a movie one time.
You know, yeah, go see.
Wonderful. Can I say something about that?
Sure.
Huh.
I frankly think McConaughey would be a better governor than Beto would. Beto would be a better lieutenant governor. And here's why. The lieutenant governor is the one who has all the power in Texas. And I think as a person who could advocate for things to get people to vote for them, I think McConaughey would be better in that regard. For the reasons that I just said.
I go with the guy. You know, I've been listening to Beto O'Rourke ever since I first started doing this, getting more involved in politics and whatnot. The man is inspiring to listen to. It's not a script that he's speaking of. It's not a recollection of, you know, he's poured his heart into every corner of this state.
He's a very good organizer, too.
He is an extremely good organizer.
Put him in the position that has real power. That's the lieutenant governor in Texas.
But the lieutenant governor doesn't sign bills into law.
That's right. Yeah, it's the governor that does.
And the governor sets the agenda. The lieutenant governor, yeah, he runs the Senate, and that's important. But ultimately, while constitutionally Texas's governor is not a particularly powerful governor, in the end, he's the guy who either signs or vetoes legislation.
But if you have a person like Beto who says, I mean, I'm just saying, this is, I think what would be ideal would be to have McConaughey as the governor and Beto as the lieutenant governor.
Or vice versa.
Well, here's my concern, though.
I am a diehard Beto fan.
We should have learned by now that TV and film stars do not make good presidents. I give you Reagan.
Or executors, yeah. Exactly. And Arnold.
Or Arnold.
I'll be back.
That goes on. Yeah.
That's the pretense of mine. I'm disappointed to see it because we're not talking about a reality TV show here.
Well, right.
We're not
talking
about a movie or anything else. This is the state of Texas. It's all of us.
Yeah, but John, here's the other thing. If he ain't running, why is the for-profit media in Texas out there polling on him?
Well,
great question. You know,
because it makes for good
news. That's
a
great question.
Because it puts eyeballs on screens. It's fucking clickbait.
Matthew McConaughey.
All about the fucking money. Always about the dollars, man.
That illustrates my point.
To
wit? Are people going to listen? I'm sorry. See, you. This is exactly why they're better than we are at politics. You know what? If I had the fact is, the one who has the real power to bring legislation, to pass legislation, is Beto, or is the lieutenant governor. I would much rather have Beto doing that and saying, "Okay, Matt, go ahead and sign this," and he'll sign it.
Yeah, but Steve, the problem there, and by the way, thank you, Jeremy, you jumped in again. That's so kind of you. We're down to 165. 165, and hopefully maybe the over the weekend crew will take down the rest of it. You know, how effective, though, would, and I think this is a real thing, how effective would would a Democrat lieutenant governor be with a bunch of wild-eyed maniac a Republican majority Texas state Senate.
Now wait a second. I'm going on these assumptions. The assumption is we're talking about two people. We're talking about McConaughey and we're talking about O'Rourke. Which one of those two? I'm only addressing
O'Rourke
those
would be better. You know, he would do his job more in the Texas Senate because he knows what he's doing.
Yes, as the lieutenant governor.
But
McConaughey would be the one to persuade people. He's a movie guy.
I'm not too sure what side he's on.
He's
a libertarian.
Ding. He's a libertarian.
No, he's not.
He's a libertarian. He's a fuck nut.
No, he's not.
He's an independent.
You know, he just came into the political scene. I got to admit, I don't know that much about his politics right now. I never thought I would have to face that question. I'm going, and thank goodness, because I'm just itching to do this. I just got an invitation from one of our local district politicians that is running for reelection. And I got invited to the kickoff for his campaign. And I'm going with camera in hand. I want to be involved in this process.
That's my larger point, John. By polling about a guy who isn't even running,
yeah,
versus a guy who apparently is going to run, they're deliberately trying the and it's conservative media in Texas. They are deliberately trying to
angle a shiny object.
Yeah, and keep people's eyes off of Beto O'Rourke with a guy that people know because he sells fucking cars on the TV, which is, you know, right there with, you know, selling meat through the mail.
You bet.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I know who Beto is, and I know what's in his heart, and I know the dedication and the drive that he has. And that's what I want for my state. That's what I want for my country. It's what I want from all of us, is to be more involved. I don't want, you know, just because somebody's been on TV and is a big actor and got a big name recognition, you know, it does that override any experience, any true work that somebody has done over their lifetime to try to make
right or knowing what the fuck you're doing?
Yeah.
Or if that's what we can use to get what we want.
Yeah, but that's not going to be Matthew McConaughey. He's not a liberal Democrat. He's not a Democrat at all.
No.
Maybe I'm just biased because my ex was
in. And I admit I am too, because like I said, I am a Beto fan. When he ran for Senate here, he came so close to beating Ted Cruz, the closest that Texas had ever seen in a long time to taking that seat, and he never gave up. You know, a lot of people fade away and you'll see him come back next election cycle. No, Beto O'Rourke has stayed on this trail this whole time, responding to every crisis, every issue that Texas faces. Beto O'Rourke is there.
And John,
and that's what Texas needs.
I agree with you, John. He's earned his stripes.
He has.
And I have to say this, has anyone ever seen the movie that I'm talking about called Lone Star? With Matt McConaughey and Chris Christopherson, it was a John Sayles film.
Yes,
you know, I
want to
say
it.
Yes,
because my ex was in that. My ex was the my ex was the young black kid who was the son of the guy who became the commander of the military base. So,
oh, how cool!
And
of course, this little community has a couple of connections to John Sayles films.
And by the way, I've tried to find Matewan.
YouTube.
Okay, because I can't find it. I tried to on
YouTube.
I tried to buy it. Okay.
No, it's on YouTube. You can watch it. But Dan Fisher was began his behind the scenes props work when they shot Matewan here in West Virginia, and John Sayles' entire body of work is brilliant.
Well, I mean his bailiwick, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here. Has always been writing, because that's screenwriting, because that's
But he's a hell of a director too. I mean,
okay. But I'm saying, to the extent that he's been nominated for any Academy Awards, it's been in the screenwriting area.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm one last thing, then I promise I'm going to shut up for the rest of the night. If Tracy is listening, Tracy and I are connected on Facebook. If Tracy could do me a favor, message me her address, because I have something to send her from something she a contribution she made. It's on my messages. I'm not savvy enough.
I will get it for you again.
Okay. Because I don't know how to search. I'm not savvy enough to be able to find it. So.
No, you do. Well, if it's on Messenger, you've just got to scroll down through it, and it's maddening. But we got to get out of here because we're well past the 8 o'clock hour. Malloy's on the way at 9 p.m. I got to get the program uploaded. And it's been a great conversation. Thank you, John, for popping by after what can only be described as a harrowing week. I hope everybody at your house just stays happy and healthy. And give everybody my fondest regards.
Thank you.
Thank you very kindly to our dear sister Jude in the great Northwest. Thank you, Jude. We are now down to 155, and hopefully the over the weekend crew will take that down so that we don't have some sort of harrowing the fundraising hole to fill, because we still got it. We've already got a hole because of my unavoidable absence this past Wednesday. That was a snake bit day. I mean, got good news at the doctor's office. But then came home and found the internet was out and my microphone boom was broken and I can't find the old one. So I've got a sort of jury-rigged affair going here now. And I've got an old standalone floor stand boom, and I've only walked into it about a half a dozen times so far. Oh, for sake. Yeah, because I needed that. Maybe over the weekend we'll find the old boom or the new boom.
Not only the bills, but equipment, baby. So if you could donate, please. Please do.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Thanks, everybody. It's been a great conversation. They all are on Friday on the front porch. Hopefully, come Monday, we will once again have the Moran stacked up like cordwood. It just happens that way. Thanks to all of you, all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you so very kindly. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Between you all, you're the only reason this network exists and that this program can continue as it does. Thank you so much. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our news ninjas, or thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky in the seat of honor around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable of Friday on the Front Porch. Thank you to our news ninjas. Remember, the program will continue off-air as it goes from being the front porch to Sparky's back porch. And jump right into the conversation, if you like, later on. It's all the back porch is a rousing Jim Dandy conversation, too. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Like I said, remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AHE Act. It means the world to Appalachia. And, of course, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. With the Delta variant running wild through this country, thanks to the monumental stupidity of the maggots in the maggot states, well, it's never been more important to get your vaccine and to make sure that those you know and love around you are also vaccinated. Maintain your first line of defenses, just like Paul from Parts Unknown keeps reminding us. Wash your hands, don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, purse or pocket. Wear gloves where appropriate if need be. Wear your mask where appropriate, and especially among the unvaccinated. Maintain your social distance in such situations. And if somebody comes towards you babbling about how Donald Trump's going to become Speaker of the House, and then he'll impeach Biden and Harris, and then he'll be president again like he's supposed to be because it was stole from him. Well, if you hear somebody coming towards you babbling that crazy crap, avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.